Human destiny is like a bullet fired at a distant target. We aim the gun at our aspirations, our purpose. But as our willpower falters, our hands shake and the gun barrel shifts. And while the barrel of the gun may only move an inch, the effect is magnified with every foot the bullet travels, so that by the time it strikes the backstop, that tiny shift has cast the bullet far wide of its mark. America, it seems, is off target. America's collapse into stupefied tyrannical corporatism was not a sudden one. It's been a gradual slide into depravity and socialism. It's the cascading effect of innumerable events through history. But we have to ask ourselves, where exactly did we go wrong? When in our history did America lose the plot? You could argue it was the 60s with the radical reaction to government oppression and senseless war, the hijacking of civil rights by extremist groups, or even earlier with the world wars that industrialized the economy and positioned us as policemen of the world, or even earlier to the nation-wrenching vicissitudes of the Civil War. But one year stands above all others as being the genesis of our current quagmire. In this one year alone did so many instruments of oppression and institutions of control come into being. This wasn't just the year that the rifle of destiny strayed from the bullseye. This was the year that the men holding the rifle decided to aim at a different target entirely. The year was 1913. 1913 was, in many ways, the high watermark of Western civilization, the peak of advancement before the Great War the following year ushered in a century of conflict and decline. For America in particular, 1913 was a year of unparalleled accomplishment. New York's Grand Central Station opened as the world's largest train station. The Woolworth Building pierced the clouds as the tallest tower in the world. The Lincoln Highway became the first automobile road to stretch across the United States. And President Woodrow Wilson triggered the explosion of the Gamboa Dam, completing the construction of the Panama Canal. But just as these profound achievements heralded a new and glorious age, the seeds of destruction and bondage were being sown in the shadows of American cities. The Revenue Act, introduced by Senator Aldrich of Rhode Island, was signed into law by President Wilson, creating the first federal income tax in the United States. Originally meant to be just a 1% tax on only the richest Americans, this bill laid the groundwork for the perpetual and significant tax burden under which all Americans struggle to this day, and it did so by drastically lowering tariffs, easing the barrier of entry for foreign goods to American markets. This would not, however, be the most significant contribution that Senator Aldrich would make in 1913 to the eventual enslavement of the American people to the whims of the banking elite. This would come in the form of the Aldrich Plan, better known as the Federal Reserve Act. This was the fulfillment of a plan set down some 3 years before by a cabal of bankers on the now infamous Jekyll Island, a subversion of the constitutional right of the American government to control its own money supply, surrendering ultimate control of the economic system to an unaccountable, unelected consortium of self-interested bankers. With 1913 being the genesis of both federal income taxes and the Federal Reserve, my argument could be complete. But unfortunately, this is hardly the end of the evidence. That year, the 17th Amendment passed. This amendment is the reason that senators are elected by the entire population of a state. Prior to the change, senators were appointed by the legislature of each state, the intention being that U.S. senators would be responsible to their own state rather than national interests. The effect of this change can be most readily seen in the most recent senatorial elections, in which a small group of donors in California and New York spent millions of dollars attempting to sway the electorate of far-flung states such as Texas. This control could hardly be managed if those who wished to manipulate elections had to contend with the hundreds of local races that make up each state government. The 17th Amendment moved us significantly more towards a democratic mob rule and away from the Republican system of diffused power upon which the country had been founded. As damaging as these changes have been, government was not the only sphere to see new forms of societal control. 1913 was also the year in which two incredibly powerful globalist organizations began operation. The first is the Rockefeller Foundation, whose anti-human agenda needs no recitation to the InfoWars audience, and whose influence over the corporate, academic, and governmental structures of the world is second to none, whose purpose was the virtual enslavement of every human being to a system of servitude beneath the enlightened controllers of industry. The second organization is the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, founded in 1913 to protect the reputation of Leo Frank after he was tried and convicted for the rape and murder of Mary Fagan. Since then, the organization has used the cloak of tolerance.
All right, folks, you can find and share that full video on my X at Harrison H. Smith. It's War Room Live. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be with you for the first hour. Rex Jones taking over for the subsequent 2 hours after this. But we still have a lot of news to cover, and we're going to try to get into as much of it as we possibly can. We're going to continue from the last hour of the Jones Show, our coverage of some of the confusion at play in American politics. This clip, it sort of ties my brain up in knots, to be honest with you. It's baffling to imagine how we're ever going to actually get anything done when everything gets utterly confused with the injection of things like anti-Semitism into the conversation, which makes it literally impossible for us to have a reasonable conversation about things like the actions of Israel. So I want to go first to clip number 4. This is a woman running for office, I believe, although she might have, I believe she won her primary. But hopefully I can lay out to you here the like impossibility of combining with the left when they have this mindset. And I fully and completely blame them. I would love if the left could stop being so utterly insane and wanting to destroy our country. Like, I could agree with them on certain aspects of we need limitations to the capitalistic exploitation we've been subjected to. I don't know. We could make deals. I'm sure we could make deals. The problem is that anywhere that we do agree, it's contentious. And even then, it's overwhelmed many times over by the policies they support, whose only purpose could ever possibly be to destroy me and my country and my family. So until they stop pushing that stuff, I guess it's hopeless. Let's go to this one. I don't even know her name. I don't even care. But this, it's like, I don't know. I think you'll see what I mean. It's like you think maybe there's a chance you could come together because we both oppose an obvious act of horror and terror and genocide in Israel. But how are you supposed to do that when the left is convinced that nobody on the conservative side ever actually believes anything that they say, never actually tells the truth? Like, it's, again, genuinely crazy, because it's so clear what our motivations are, what we want. You don't need an ulterior motive because we tell the truth. But they have to insinuate and spread the lie that literally everything we believe is actually just some seething, purposeless. In a way, there's a lot of corollaries to the claims of anti-Semitism, right? You go, hey, you know, I don't really like what Israel's doing. And it's like, oh, so you hate Jews, do you? And it's like, can I not just oppose the death of innocent people? Do you really think that I'm such an evil person that I both, A, don't care about the death of evil people, of innocent people, rather. I don't care about the death of innocent people, but I do want to use that death to, like, get money. I don't even know what they think our motivations are. I'll show you the clip here. But you see this everywhere. Hey, I don't like my country being flooded by 50 million foreigners. Why? Pretty obvious. For one, they don't like me. They don't like America. They don't try to be American. It is changing the face of my country. That's the obvious thing that, again, we can end the conversation here. I have no obligation to justify that position. It's my country. It's my way of life. It's being destroyed. I'm against it. End of story. But we could go on. I don't like that they're stealing jobs and lowering wages. I don't like that the powers that be, the most powerful corporations in this country and the world, rely on scab labor so they can undercut what would be living wages here in America. I don't like how much money it costs to be taking care of people that have never paid into our system but do somehow qualify for welfare and even retirement in this country and Social Security. I mean, there's like 10 million reasons, but apparently none of those are valid. None of those are real. The only reason you could ever possibly want to limit immigration to your country is only because you're a white supremacist that hates brown people. And it's just like, it's got to be projection. It's got to be projection because in a lot of ways, their positions are only comprehensible as elements of destruction towards our way of life. In other words, I don't need an ulterior motive to not want to be destroyed, right? That's a great motive. I don't need to come up with a different, you know, it's like, no, my country's being destroyed. I don't like that. It's pretty damn simple. Why do you want kids to be trans? That's something that's like, okay, you need to explain what this is really about, because on the face of it, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. You're obviously, you have to have ulterior motives, because on the face of it, nobody would ever actually want this to be the case. And that's the case with a lot of people on the left. Let's go to the video. Clip number four. Here's this crazy lady. Let's watch.
Ever been to Israel or anywhere in the region? Mm-hmm. Would it change your mind or open your perspectives if you did?
I'm sure it would, right? Part of the work that we've been doing here as well is having conversations with, you know, the Jewish community, specifically the Zionist Jewish community, to, you know, better understand different perspectives, different positions, different experiences. Again, my values have always been rooted in protecting dignity and safety for every single person, mm-hmm. especially as it relates to these inalienable things about our religion or ethnicity or our mm-hmm. culture. And my greatest concern right now is that the state of Israel is losing support all across the political spectrum here in the U.S. And I believe that...
Why does that concern you?
I think we're leaving a vacuum on the left and the progressive wing to speak to this criticism in a way that is in line with our values, to where people like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, who are raging anti-Semites and white supremacists and Christian nationalists, are pretending to care about Palestinian safety, when really it's just masking their overt hatred for Jewish people.
They're singing my song.
And if we are not presenting our vision of what we believe in with our democratic values that extends not just to the Palestinian people, but to the Israeli people and to the Jewish people, you know, that land has a distinctly Jewish character, a distinctly Christian character, a distinctly Muslim character.
Yeah.
It's a land that has seen bloodshed for centuries. Mm-hmm. And we, I think, are doing a disservice to the people of that region by not offering our progressive vision in a way that isn't immediately swatted down as, you know, bigoted or anti-Semitic. And that's going to require a lot of conversations, a lot of hard conversations. There will be things that we learn, things that there will be missteps and mistakes made. But as long as we're continuing that conversation, we are at the very least presenting an actual vision in line with our values that can combat and hopefully silence a lot of the anti-Semitism that's coming from the right, because we're leaving that vacuum wide open right now if we are afraid to have these conversations.
So Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, the two most effective, in a lot of ways, opponents to Israel in the recent past, I think I've been more effective personally, because they have, you know, they have gone a little off the rails in certain parts. But Tucker Carlson, whose favorite vacation spot was Israel, who until very recently would endlessly talk about how much he loved Israel and would qualify every criticism of Israel with effusive praise for the Jewish people. He's actually a virulent anti-Semite who doesn't actually care about Palestinian people, but just sees it as a mask for his hatred of Jews, just like Candace Owens, who worked with Ben Shapiro for years at the Daily Wire, only got fired, not because she hates Jews, but because she criticized Israel. So it's like, do these people really want to stop Israel? It doesn't sound like she does. It sounds like she thinks that you can appeal to Israel and they'll be amazed by your progressive values and, you know, learn to love again. I mean, I don't know what she thinks is going to happen, but this is kind of the point, right? Nothing's going to happen. She's not going to do anything against Israel. These people that are getting elected as left-wing socialists, whose support in no small part comes from their opposition to Israel, they are not going to do anything to stop Israel. Look at AOC when she got into office. She doesn't even talk about it anymore. She votes in favor of the funds because these people are weak and cowards and they don't actually care about this as much as they claim they do. They don't suffer from opposing Israel in the way that Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and myself have. They get rewarded and celebrated for it. And of course, they're called anti-Semites, which you would think would make them somewhat, you know, understanding that that claim is often wielded dishonestly against people who pose a political threat. She can't extend that courtesy or understanding to the likes of Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens, or I'm sure anybody else on the right that has a genuine outrage for what's going on to the Palestinian people. She can't give them the grace of being like, hey, you know, maybe I got these people wrong. You know, these people really, they've destroyed their own careers in many ways. Like they've gotten fired from their jobs. They've been cast out of respectable society. They've paid a severe price for their standing up against the evil that Israel is committing. But she can't give that credence. So when if she gets elected and she gets into office, what is she going to do to stop Israel? Is she going to, you know, defund their military? No, they're now merged with our government. Is she going to, you know, sanction them and declare war against them or whatever? Like, no, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. The Jewish power structure that, you know, doesn't even see the need to, like, bother with her. Like, they don't care because they know that they've got the Republicans on lock and they've got about 90% of the Democrats on lock. Couple, you know, rambunctious DSA candidates getting in, they're not swaying the course of the American government. And even if they did, it wouldn't be in any way that just changes the trajectory that we're currently on. What's going to happen is she's going to get in with promises to restrain Israel. She's going to find that's kind of hard, actually. So, you know, what turns out to be really easy is flooding our country with immigrants, is degrading and eliminating our way of life. Like, that's going to be really easy for her. She's going to have a lot of success in that because she's in combination with the powerful in that regard. But she is not going to be able to do anything against Israel. And you can tell just from the way that she's talking, she doesn't even understand what's actually happening here. She actually seemingly thinks that, like, you can point out to Israel that its behavior is inconsistent with its espoused liberal beliefs. And it's like, what? You think they care about that in the slightest? No, you just keep calling the most effective anti-Israel voices on the right wing anti-Semites. I'm sure that's ingratiating you with the ADL and AIPAC. I'm sure they'll, you know, be willing to fund you because you're actually going after the people that actually pose a threat to them. You do not pose a threat to them. I remember getting in this argument a while ago with the drummer of the band Guster because I said something about right-wingers being targeted, you know, as a threat by Israel. And he's like, well, what about me? I hate Israel, too. And I'm like, you're a lefty. They don't care. They don't care. Your entire position, your entire platform, your entire political persuasion is the destruction of America. That's fine with them. They don't care. They know that you can't actually argue against or organize against their actions in Israel because you can't even identify what's motivating their actions in Israel. You think it's anti-Semitism to point out that it's not just Israel, that it's Jewish communities here in America as well. You'll argue against that, which means you'll do nothing to actually destroy the base of their power in the Middle East or here in America, you're a useful idiot for them who's like co-opting their unpopularity, but doing nothing to actually fight back against their power. So again, what does she think she's going to do? And she can't even illustrate it. She still feels the need to frame her opposition to Israel, who I suppose she thinks is like, a genocidal nation of colonists, like, right? That's got to be her position. And yet she has to frame her opposition as it's really bad for Israel. Israel is really, not popular. And I'm worried about that. I'm worried that we're not framing our opposition to Israel in appropriately progressive and forward thinking ways. And it's like, that's because you don't actually oppose Israel. You just oppose white people, and you see the Israeli conflict as a proxy for white versus brown. So you don't care about Israel. You don't like Israel. I wouldn't even call you an anti-Semite. You're not that smart. You're not that smart. You can't even figure out what's actually going on here. You just think white people bad. Tucker Carlson white. He bad. He against Israel, that would be good, but he's white, so it must be bad. It must be some sort of, there's no way you could possibly actually care about the Palestinian people, because the Palestinian people, I remind you, are brown. So obviously from her distorted and convoluted, frankly retarded worldview, Tucker Carlson's genuine principled opposition to Israel is really just an expression of how much he hates Palestinians. Walk me through, or like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Islamic extremism's rise in California and what to do about it. Maybe she's playing the game perfectly. Maybe she knows. Maybe she's perfectly aware of what the sides really are and is playing her role perfectly. That may actually be it. She understands that in the war she's fighting against white people and Christianity and America and capitalism, that she is in fact on the side of Israel. And so her, outrage is in fact entirely performative and insincere. But let's go now to this clip of Mark Wayne Mullen, because I feel like this is another kind of, I see a similarity between these two clips, but here's Mark Wayne Mullen at a conference. Again, the video that went viral from this was about him basically saying that we needed to provide amnesty because, and it just makes no sense what he's saying. He's like, yeah, some immigrants take American jobs, but other immigrants don't take American jobs. It's like, what? How could that, what? If it's a job in America and an immigrant has it, that's taking a job from an American, obviously. They just say this stuff that just means nothing. It's madness. I mean, that genuinely means nothing. So if a immigrant comes over and gets a job on a factory floor, that's taking a job from an American. But if he takes a job in a cornfield, it's not. Why? Because it's agriculture. I mean, this is just totally arbitrary. But that's not even the clip I want to go to. I want to go to this clip because, once again, it illustrates just the sort of, I don't know how to put it. Like, just the Republicans are playing a game here. They're playing a little game to convince you that something is happening when nothing is happening, and convince you that the runway they're building for the left is actually a good thing. I think you'll see what I mean. Here's Mark Wayne Mullen, head now of the deportation efforts, pitching an immigration policy structure that is not applicable to America. Let's watch.
On it. If we're looking to grow our economy, then we need to look at making more permanent solutions on this and getting the employers involved in the system. In order to do that, though, that takes coordination between labor. Our unions still have a say in this, guys. We got to get labor involved. We got to get industry involved. And we got to fill out where the holes are created, because this narrative that it steals American jobs is true in some industries. It's not true for all industries. And we need to pay attention and be sensitive to that as we move forward, because it is America first. We want to take care of Americans first. It's our economy. It's our homeland. But there's a way to utilize, labor where we're not having the participation rate we need to, and we can plug those holes.
So he's essentially pitching, because what he's saying is not wrong on the face. I mean, it is wrong on the face of it, but it makes me think of something like Qatar. Qatar, you may know, out of everybody that lives in the country of Qatar, only about 10% of them are actually Qataris. You would think that this would be a horrible situation because, I mean, look at the immigration of places like the UK. It's minuscule. It's not. Now imagine if the UK was 90% immigrant. I mean, how bad would it be? The thing is, the Qataris do not offer citizenship to anybody. It's pretty simple. They're like, yeah, you can come here. You can work here. You can make a wage here. You can shop here. You are not a Qatari. You can live your whole life here. You can own homes. You can do whatever you want here, but you will never be a citizen of Qatar. And that's just how it is. And when you have that solid structure, then yes, you can do what Mark Wayne Mullen is suggesting. Have workers come in, have, you know, employers reaching out to other countries, bringing workers in, working. Okay, that works. And that's sort of what he's describing. He's like, well, we still need the workers. They're just not going to be permanent. We have to make a way so that we can get the scab worker slaves that the corporations need without, you know, creating a path to citizenship. He's trying to, like, thread that needle. Does he forget that we are in a democracy whose control of the government flips constantly between the Republican Party, who seems lukewarm and tepid in their support for deportations, and the Democrats, who are openly in favor of demographically replacing the entire United States? So if you as a Republican are open to bringing in millions of workers, but only on the contingency that they leave when they go home, you're out of office in 2 years. The Democrats are in office. Now you've brought in millions of workers that the Democrats are happy to give citizenship. It doesn't work this way here in America. It would work this way if we were Qatar, or if we had any sense of, you know, national solidarity, so that the Democrats and Republicans, sure, we may disagree on the size of government and the role in, you know, certain aspects of their participation with the, you know, civilian population. But at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We need to protect that. That's not the case, though. So if the Republican Party, the party that ostensibly has taken on the crown, taken on the, you know, cloaked themselves as the champions of deportations, if you are in fact just allowing people to come in thinking that, well, we'll never do this. It's the same thing that happened with the Iran war. People went, hey, this is going to create another migrant crisis, and they're all in, you're going to flood our countries with Muslims. And people would go, but Trump is in charge. He wouldn't let that happen. It's like, first of all, yes, he would. But second of all, he's out of office in 2 years. You think the migrant crisis is going to be over by then? It'll be just starting up by then. The Democrats will be in charge and they'll open the gates. It's this crazy belief that, like, no, we'll start the migration flow, but we'll be able to cut it off whenever we want. Oh, now we're out of power, so the immigration flow continues. All the people we brought in are now permanent citizens and have been given amnesty, because that's what the Democrats are essentially running on. So to put these two clips in context and together, you've got the Democratic Socialists that don't actually understand the forces at work behind Israel, that are incapable and totally incompetent to do anything to unseat or even ruffle the feathers, really, of the entrenched Jewish lobbying power structures here in America. They're not going to be able to do anything to stop America's support of Israel, even if they really wanted to, which I think at the end of the day, they do think that's anti-Semitic because they hate white Christians and see Jews as allies in this combat. Meanwhile, the Republicans are not doing nearly enough and are just waiting for the Democrats to get in to ruin everything they've done up to this point.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks, you've seen the deplatforming, you've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Back, folks. We're gonna go back in time a little bit here, all the way back in like 2015 or so. Do you remember a little kerfluffle called Gamergate? You happen to remember Gamergate because everything that we're living through has been downstream of Gamergate. If you aren't familiar with what Gamergate was, it's very convoluted, but essentially, you had an infiltration of the gaming community by feminists. Long story short, you had this industry, video games, that was on the rise and was sort of for the first time taking over other major entertainment industries, more popular than sports, more popular than movies, more profitable than any of these things. And yet, it was almost entirely supported by men, boys, and was catered to them, and you can sort of get into your own theory psychologically why they would be so outraged at this, but obviously it was slated for destruction. Essentially, it was decided that because this was overrepresented by men. It is therefore discriminatory towards women and racist. And also it's racist, and probably gamers are mostly white. So, you know, it has to be destroyed for that reason. In other words, you can come up with your own like speculation as to why it was so necessary. It could have just been the money and the power. Like, wow, video games are really influential. We can't let it be in the hands of just like autistic engineer white guys who just are doing it for the love of the art form. It has to be manufactured to push our political message, right? We've seen this exact same thing in movies. We've seen the exact same thing in television. Of course, we covered, I believe it was last week, just the downfall of entertainment media as we know it, the total collapse of quality, corresponding almost perfectly with the deliberate exclusion of white people from writing jobs, or any jobs for that matter, in Hollywood or television anywhere. This obviously happened with video games. We could show you if the crew could find it quick enough. But I mean, there's so many comparisons where it's like, here's the video game company when it started, was founded, created the blockbuster, you know, A-plus video game that made it famous. And it's literally like seven dudes. They look like guys you'd find hanging out at your local computer parts store. There's nerdy white guys. There's like six of them. And they're like, we made Halo. And it's just like, oh my God, this is the best game of all time. And the comparison is between like, here's what the gaming company looked like when it was genius and breaking ground and setting new standards and amazing. And then here's what it looks like now. And there's about 500 more people than there were before. And they're all women and Indian guys. Basically just deliberately destroying the, you know, demographic makeup of video games in general. The other part of this, I've always thought, not just identifying things that guys and particularly white guys like and then destroying that on purpose, there's certainly an aspect to that. But video games in particular never made sense, because it's like the one thing that is totally outside of typical cultural boundaries. I mean, you can have best friends through video games, right? You start gaming, you meet somebody, you know, there during the game, and, you know, you become friends, you start communicating. You can never know what they look like. You never know if they're disabled or abled. You don't know what race they are. You might not even know what sex they are if you don't actually talk to them over the voice. And it's like, here's a community that is, it's literally impossible to be racist. Like, you don't know what the person looks like. You know that their character is a big green alien, but that says nothing about themselves. So they took something that was totally free. In my experience, and the experience of most people, I mean, sure, you'd call people racist names in the chat, but that was fun. That was tradition, and everybody gave as good as they got. But that was considered toxic. When in reality, it was totally, whatever the opposite is, atoxic, right? It was totally healthy. It was actually good. It was actually a place where people would come together. And it was like, nobody was like, oh, I like Halo and he likes Halo, but he's black, so I'm not going to be friends with him. Nobody knew, nobody cared. So as much as it was about destroying something that men enjoyed primarily, it was also about destroying something that actually superseded and was above and beyond racial or, you know, gender concerns. It was, how good are you at the game? It doesn't matter who you are. Are you good at the game? Great, I want you on my team. Oh, but he's a black guy. Okay. Have you seen him snipe? You know, have you seen him, you know, play Madden? It's amazing. Like, he's going to be on my team. It was above and beyond and wasn't affected by these things. So they had to force it in. And so now you've got the gaming companies have been completely taken over by people who genuinely do. And it's the same thing with movies, right? People who are writing Star Wars, they don't actually like Star Wars. They're parasites. These people don't actually like games. They understand that games are powerful. They understand that games are influential. So they want to have power over them so they can shape the minds of Americans, not because they actually want to create a good game, not because they actually want to tell a good story to make a good movie. They don't want to make a good Star Wars. They want to make a Star Wars with a woman as the lead. That's the concern. They want to make a Star Wars with a black character as one of the main characters. That's the point. The story sucks. The acting is terrible. The graphics are dismal. It doesn't matter because they got what they wanted. They just happened to destroy a beloved IP in the process, as they do to every video game. So Bethesda is one of these video game companies. that used to be incredible. I mean, the stuff they came out with is still being played to the Skyrim, sort of their, you know, the Fallout games, like really incredible. Those are Bethesda, right? I'm not crazy. Yeah, they are. We got gamers in the, we got the most depressed class of people in the world sitting on the other side of this wall on the crew. But they were really, really great. And it's actually really funny. You know, they'll again do comparisons where it's like, you know, the current crop of Bethesda devs and they are literally all just like trans communists. And then it's like back in the day and the guy who wrote the lore, the like, you know, story behind the fantasy world of the Elder Scrolls and Skyrim and everything. It's like, yeah, he wrote this like over a week where he just like dropped acid and LSD. And it's just like you had these like weird nerds who were just like passionate and driven and just like had these ideas they wanted to express. And they just, they had this outlet to do it and they made some of the best games in the world. Then their success was spied by BlackRock and others who came in and said, we want to help you. We think, you know, you've done a lot with very little. What if we gave you a heck of a lot more to help you in this mission? And then they replaced them all with leftist activists. Now the games suck. They're going broke. They're going down completely. And now they're protesting. So this is Bethesda Save Our Devs Rally from July 15th, 2026. These videos have been going a bit viral. I believe we have one. I forgot to write down the number, but I want to show you two clips. I want to show you first the clip of the actual rally itself of the protest or the whatever you call it, you know, communist sit-in. Clip 31 here, Bethesda union members protest layoffs and demand dignity and respect, even though they have, they're basically like, they killed the golden goose. They're now wearing it as a costume. And they're demanding respect and demanding that they be paid despite the fact that they taken over the company and driven it into the ground because they're incompetent losers who are blinded by their own political bias. Let's watch.
Morale is really low because, you know, we've been told that we're making great games that players love and that we're doing well. And to have this suddenly hit us has been a huge shock to us.
It sucks.
We make all kinds of games, all kinds of people love.
It'd be really nice if we could just get back to work and make them games that will define a generation of video gaming.
I worked at ZeniMax for about 5 years. We are having a march and a rally to demand dignity and respect and an end to the cycle of layoffs.
They're all going to be unemployed in a few years, replaced by some 15-year-old kid with Claude. Yeah, I just say replace them all with AI and just let the 12 and 13-year-old white boys just like absolutely blow them out of the water with creativity and, you know, compelling gameplay. They suck. But, you know, this is what you get. Like, you filled your company with these people. Now they won't even work without being paid for games that suck and nobody's buying. And they can't even complete. When did Skyrim come out? 2015 or something? You know, where's the follow-up to that? It just doesn't exist anymore. So they've hollowed out these companies. The way that 2011 is when it came out. Wow, even older than I thought. Yeah, so for 15 years, they've come out with nothing because it was around 10 years ago that the cultural genocide took place, the cultural arson. Fire was lit, and it's basically burned through all entertainment by this point. And we reported on this stuff at the time, but this was all downstream from Me Too, which again, if you really want to unpack this, it's so wild how this came about. So you basically have, you know, Harvey Weinstein raping everybody in Hollywood. It's like this giant open secret that everybody knows and jokes about it at award ceremonies and all this other stuff. Finally, it's given like appropriate journalistic treatment. This big article comes out explaining his rape pipeline that he ran through Hollywood, how everybody was in on it. And instead of taking accountability for that, and instead of saying, gee, you know, we better look in the mirror and ask ourselves how we, Hollywood, allowed this to happen, they instead said, actually, this is all of you. This is everybody. Actually, it's not Harvey Weinstein, a particular person in a particular role in a particular industry in a particular town that this took place. Actually, everybody's a rapist. It's a rape culture. Your boss is a rapist. Your coworkers are rapists. and you can destroy their lives and take their jobs if you just accuse them of that. And so it became this, like, reign of terror. That's really why, I mean, you look at Me Too, it was essentially a reign of terror where they took this one guy in order to really to protect him and their industry. They then claimed it was everybody everywhere and got everybody to go along with this. And they used this, they actually weaponized this to take over major industries, including corporations like Bethesda. So what happened with Bethesda was they were suddenly hit with claims about a rape culture at the office that were supported and propagandized and spread by the California government that was all totally fake, but worked in forcing them and pressuring them to fire all of their competent, intelligent, devoted people and hire a bunch of political activists, women, to destroy the, you know, gaming systems. Here's Asmongold. If we can go to the Asmongold video from today, clip number 65. Here's him reading a thread about how Bethesda was hollowed out and destroyed on verifiably falsified claims of a rape culture at the company. Let's watch.
In case you didn't know, all of the allegations of sexual misconduct, abuse, harassment, and quote, frat boy culture were entirely fake, and the state of California even admitted that there was no evidence substantiating any of the claims. The entire controversy around Blizzard was set up by California to force the company to stop hiring white men, using Me Too allegations to strong-arm them. Some of the accusations were so bizarre and insane that they included theft and consumption of breast milk during work hours, a rape room named after Bill Cosby, sexual harassment to the point of an employee ending her life. All of these claims were essentially a theater performance over the fact that only 1 in 5 Blizzard employees were women. As a result, Blizzard agreed to pay roughly $18 million in fines and set up HR hiring practices that would discriminate against white men. Internal messages between California Civil Rights Division officials showed the entire thing was a ploy to send a message to the industry to literally ruin video games. Wow. How about that? That's crazy. I don't even know what to say. Do you remember somebody in chat said this? Do you remember when I said that gamers are the most oppressed group in society? It's not women, certainly not women. It's not gay people, it's not trans, it's not disabled people, it's gamers. Gamers are the most openly discriminated against group. We're not Jews, it's gamers. We're having our spaces colonized and they're getting mad at us for not liking it.
Yeah, new report sheds light on what occurred in Activision Blizzard's developer horrific Cosby suit. No, they just made stuff up. So essentially they like were threatening like giant $1 billion fines. And then, basically they were like, okay, well, we'll replace our people with, you know, leftist activists. By the way, go back to, what was that video? 41. Go back to the, protest video or the whatever strike dev video. Clip 31. Let's go to clip 31 again. Play it for me real quick, and then I'm going to pause it at a specific part.
Morale is really low because, you know, we've been told that we're making great games that players love.
All right,
and that
pause
we're doing
it. Okay, look over there on the left. Okay, zoom and enhance. What do I see? I see a man with the tattoo of a hammer and a sickle on his neck because they literally replace the good workers building a successful company with a bunch of literal communist activists. But the thing is, this happened all over the place. All over the place. It's not so much talked about anymore because people just sort of understand and respect, yeah, this is why your Fallout games now are poorly made communist gay propaganda. Yeah, but really, it was all out of Me Too. Me Too became a method by which industries could be taken over by leftist activists. And that's how it was used. And it was used extremely effectively. Unfortunately, it has ruined entertainment across the board pretty much entirely, but they got what they wanted. This exact same thing happened to Amazon Studios. Do y'all remember that? Remember, Amazon Studios, there, you know, it was right when like Netflix was hitting the ground running with their studio. They were the first to sort of start producing their own stuff. And then Disney and Amazon got on the train. And Amazon, what set it apart, its whole, like, method of production was, it was like, you know, all these other studios, they're very, like, controlled from a top-down fashion. We want to be the studio that gives artists and auteurs freedom. Their whole philosophy was, we're just going to basically give funds, give a budget to a young up-and-coming filmmaker, to somebody with a kind of interesting idea that we're not sure if it'll work. They wanted to be totally, like, decentralized with no sort of corporate oversight, but just allowing artists to create what they wanted. They thought that would be an interesting alternative to the Netflix and the Disney and these. So they hired people to helm that attempt. Now, if you think about Amazon now, they're not exactly known for that, are they? They're known for things like Rings of Power, which is one of the most putrid, disgusting, despicable acts of cultural vandalism the world has ever seen. It is one of the worst shows that has ever been created, ever. Why did that happen? Because they did exactly the same thing to Amazon that they did to the video game companies. They had a random employee make vague, unprovable claims about the leadership and force the leadership to resign and replace them with somebody with the exact opposite perspective, who said, actually, we're not going to give any freedom to our filmmakers. Everything is going to be a corporate top-down propaganda production. And so, of course, they've made nothing of note, nothing worth watching ever since. But again, look into it, because this is the way Me Too was used. And once again, if people had been listening to us at the time, it sucks, because the left and our enemies are always the ones with the initiative. They're always the ones, like, changing things up. And for some reason, our side is just, like, incapable of recognizing attacks when they're coming, right? Because you got to understand it from the perspective of these people. You're somebody that works at a video game company, or you're somebody that's a producer at Amazon, and you're a normal white Christian dude. You're not interested in tearing down the fabric of society. You're not paying attention to the machinations of left-wing extremists and their cultural manipulation, cultural warfare they're raining against you. You're just, like, trying to make good movies. You're trying to make good games. You're focused on that. You have a profit motive. You've done well, so you want to keep that going. You're, like, just focused on that. And then all of a sudden, it's like, sir, you're being accused of rape. And they're just like, what? I'm what? And they're like, yeah, sir, you're being accused of rape. You're either going to need to step down, or this whole studio is going to go under. And they're like, you know, they're just, like, totally blindsided and have no idea what's going on. And they're just like, what? You know, they feel bad even though they didn't do anything wrong, and they're, like, guilty, and they're being told that it's their actions. It's causing all of their, you know, employees and coworkers to be losing a job now. So you just need to resign. You just need to sacrifice yourself and you just sort of separate yourself so we can continue our work. And isn't that best for everybody? And they just pressured them into that. If instead they'd been informed, if they'd understood that they were in fact the victims of a cultural attack against them, that they were in a war being fought by ruthless and, you know, deceptive scumbags that are going for their throats, maybe they'd stand up against this. Maybe they would have stood up against this a little bit more. Maybe when, like, the Me Too accusation comes down, they could have just said, look, if you really had some sort of issue 5 years ago with your boss, that was the time to handle it. What you're doing now is you're weaponizing this unfalsifiable claim to try to take control of our industry. This is a political attack against people you disagree with, so you can force them out of their position, so you can put somebody you like inside, and we're not going to let you do that. If they'd known what the attack was, if they'd been informed, if they'd been connected, if they'd not fallen for the lies of the people screwing them over, and again, it's like, it's so sick the way that they play on people's empathy and sympathy and guilt, right? These people have done nothing wrong. They didn't have a Cosby room. This guy wasn't raping. I mean, none of this actually happened, but, you know, these people, they just feel bad. They're just like, oh my God, did I do something wrong? I'm so sorry. And meanwhile, the people who they're empathizing for and feeling sorry for and groveling for, you know, forgiveness from, are just vicious, cynical jackasses that are just using this cultural moment to destroy their enemies. And it's like, if you just, it's not even about empathy because you're empathizing with the projection. You're empathizing with nobody. That person doesn't exist. That person that was hurt and struggled to deal with it and now you need to resign so that they can have closure. That person doesn't exist. There's a ruthless, heartless, leftist extremist that understands that if they can lie about you well enough that you have to give your power to them. That's all that's happening. So people understood that. People recognize the wider context of the very real culture war and the very real damage it would do to our country and our industries and our entertainment. I mean, then maybe, just maybe, these people would have been able to stand up against this and explain what was really going on, not just be subsumed in this tidal wave of absurd, unprovable, and in many cases proven to be false allegations that, false though they may be and have always been, allowed and served as the mechanism for taking over in a hostile way these very important industries for shaping the minds of the American people. So now video games suck, movies suck, TV sucks. I have friends, like my friends that don't have kids, they watch so much TV and so many movies. I cannot fathom how they put up with this crap. My wife and I watch like one movie a week, like maybe once a week. We sit down, try to put a show on. We spend like 30 minutes just scrolling, just going, everything is crap. How did this happen? I guess we'll watch the same movie we've watched 10,000 times. We'll watch Life Aquatic again. We'll watch a Stanley Kubrick movie, I guess, because everything sucks. How do people not realize this? Do y'all not know your entertainment sucks? Do y'all not know this? Have you not gone on yet? Because you should be mad. You should be mad that even as the world is destroyed around you, even as the things that you would find comfort and joy are being taken away and removed and destroyed, you go to seek solace and distraction and entertainment, and it's all been colonized and turned into a weapon system against you by the very people that you hate and are trying to escape. It's like, why are we putting up with this? And why did we allow this fake Me Too propaganda campaign, all serving to cover for the, you know, Mossad operatives who were actually the power structure behind Harvey Weinstein? It had to be everybody, and it just so happened to be the video game corporations and the one studio that wasn't a top-down communist propaganda outlet. It was those places that had to be removed and taken out and replaced with communists who are now failing to make good games and wanting higher wages for the crap they do produce. Again, it's an information war. If people knew, if Roy Price or whatever his name was at Amazon knew, hey, this had nothing to do with me. I didn't do anything wrong. And the accusation against me are totally false, and I'm not resigning and I'm not giving up. And if you want to fire me, then prepare to be sued because you're firing me off this fake accusation, because this is a power play. It's a hostile takeover. Nothing more, nothing less. So I'm not going anywhere. Come and take it if you want. But I'm going to put up a fight because I know what this is. This isn't a real concern about the plight of women. This is a hostile takeover using my empathy against me. If we only understood the attack, it's not that hard to defeat, but you have to understand it. Rex Jones on the other side. Stay with us.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if. It's when. Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Last Tuesday, Trump met with Netanyahu in the White House, and Netanyahu begged Trump to restart the war. The Israelis will not help the United States in our limited and contained war against Iran because the Israelis want an unlimited war against Iran. The United States is currently bombing Iran in a limited way as a form of pressure to try to get Iran back to the negotiating table to make a deal. In other words, we see the Iranian regime surviving, and this is implied because we're trying to make a deal with them. We're trying to make a deal with them where we're going to satisfy some limited strategic objectives. We're not seeking some sort of total victory where we decapitate the regime and kill the leadership. And this is anathema to the Israelis. The Israelis don't want to make a deal with Iran. They don't want the Islamic Revolutionary regime to exist. And so to make a deal with them presupposes that we recognize that will be the governing authority in perpetuity. So the Israelis have been telling us they have no interest in fighting this limited war where we're trying to increase pressure so we could get a deal and then we can walk away. The Israelis are saying we're not going to help unless you satisfy our objectives, which are unlimited and total. We want you to join us in knocking out Iran completely and overthrowing the regime. So Netanyahu came to the White House on Tuesday to beg the president for this. Netanyahu asked Trump to restart the war with a huge military campaign aimed at degrading Iran's military and ultimately leading to the end of the regime. Well, what happens on Tuesday at the same time that Netanyahu is meeting with Trump is that Iran is launching offensive strikes on Jordan. Iran's proxies are launching attacks on Saudi Arabia. They're launching attacks on U.S. vessels at a port in the Suez Canal in Egypt. And so what this is doing is that it's pitting the U.S. allies against each other. Think about it. Israel is begging the United States to widen the war against Iran, escalate the war against Iran. Israel's begging the United States to topple the Iranian regime and hit them harder than we've ever hit them. Simultaneously, the Saudis are begging the United States to do the opposite. The Saudis are begging the U.S. to de-escalate. And so on Thursday, Trump met with Mohammed bin Salman, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and MBS from Saudi said, we would prefer that you de-escalate. It was actually on the order of Saudi Arabia. Trump explicitly said this to the press. He said, we were locked and loaded, ready to bomb Iran. He said, but our allies didn't want us to. Trump said, and you sort of have to listen to your allies, so we're giving Iran another chance. The Saudis were pressuring the United States to de-escalate. And how is Iran doing this? Well, Iran told the United States that in the event we do this all-out attack on Iran, let's say the U.S. launches this biggest strike since World War II, we bomb their missiles and defense industry. Iran communicated publicly to the United States. If that attack goes through, Iran spelled out every single target they would hit, and in what order they would hit them. And all those targets were Saudi oil infrastructure targets. Iran said, first, we're going to destroy Saudi Arabia's largest oil refinery. Then we're going to destroy their second biggest oil refinery. Then we're going to destroy all the LNG in Qatar. And Iran basically went down the list and said, we are going to destroy all of the critical infrastructure that is the economic engine of Saudi Arabia and every other Gulf country. also happens to be 20% of the world's oil supply that will be permanently, irreversibly taken offline. And obviously this creates even more pressure on Saudi Arabia. It puts more pressure on Qatar, on the Emirates, which then in turn puts pressure on the United States. And so it's very interesting how Iran is really playing five-dimensional chess, playing all the countries off of each other.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back to the War Room Live on the Alex Jones Network. I am your host, Rex Jones. Harrison was just on. My dad's going to be back later this week. Really appreciate everyone joining me on the network. I've got a real angel on your shoulder, devil on your shoulder story today. Will Trump off-ramp? Will there be a peace deal or refinement of the past MOU that was violated by the U.S.? Or will there be total war? This is kind of the duality that we're facing right now. I want to show everybody overhead shot, please. This is the big news of today, August 4th, 2026. Indian vessel sinks after being struck by projectile near Yemen waters. All seafarers rescued. Thank God, of course. Let's just minimize all these international incidents that happen, you know, every single day now that everyone overlooks. According to India's Minister of Ports, Shipping and Waterways, all 14 seafarers are rescued by Yemen's Coast Guard. A ship off the port of Aden, where traffic remained steady after the Iran-aligned Houthis said their forces had carried out missile and drone strikes on Saudi oil tankers in Aden, Yemen. There's a tanker right there. An Indian vessel sank near Yemeni waters after being struck by an unknown projectile on Tuesday. India's Ministry of External Affairs condemned the attacks and blah, blah, blah. I just want to point out things like this are happening, you know, every other day. You know, you have the Yanbu pipeline under attack. Keep in mind, the Bab el-Mandeb is not closed. The Strait of Hormuz is closed only to Saudi Arabian traffic, Israeli traffic, and American traffic. Ships that, you know, comply with the New World Order that the new regional power Iran is trying to implement, they're able to get through or to negotiate new routes. And the discussion is going to be whether or not Iran can negotiate with Oman and reach an understanding on a shared control of that waterway. Because things are not going back to a pre-February 28th world order. And joining me to talk about that in the next segment here, I'm kind of warming everything up. I want to talk about all these things because I got a lot of questions for him, is a former Green Beret geopolitical analyst expert, Anthony Aguilar. He'll be joining me. So you want to stay here until the next segment for that at the bare minimum, because you need to hear the truth about these things. I mean, we got Europe set to go in. Iran weighs allowing Europe to clear mines and Strait of Hormuz. A lot of people don't know this. One of the few areas of the U.S. Navy that we really heavily require, you know, an ability to outsource, an ability to have another country do something for us instead of vice versa, is really our ability to mine sweep. And I think Trump has said it himself. Oh, they just toss one little mine in and then you can't go in. Yes, because you can talk about the reality of getting a blockade and fighting them at sea and having these grand battles, but that's not what really matters. What really matters is commercial traffic returning to levels seen before the war? Anything like marginally comparable? Like 10% would be wonderful. It's like 5 to 10 ships a day. Strait of Hormuz, I believe, and its normal traffic was like over 150. Like, do you realize how bad that is for everyone around the world? Just because we're insulated doesn't mean they are. And when I read you this story about the Indian vessel sinking, maybe you're like, oh, I don't care. Screw India. It is what it is. No, no, we're screwed. Like, do you understand? These people are desperately trying to find energy, just like the Europeans, just like the Chinese, just like our allies, the South Koreans and the Japanese who are dying right now because they can't afford the energy because the energy prices make their inflation go up because they have to import literally everything to have a modern society, to have, you know, the beautiful country of Japan that we know today. Right. So it's we're balanced on like the head of a pin. And then people are like making jokes about it and want to play games about it and want to say it's not happening. And if you just kind of like say, oh, well, everyone says Strait of Hormuz, such a thing, like whatever's going to happen. I don't need to stay informed. I don't need to know. You need to know because they're going to lie to you. Like could be tomorrow, the next day, the next week, the next month, whatever. They're going to lie to you and send your kids, send your relatives, send your family and friends off to go die for Israel in this war that they manufactured. And if you're not aware of not just what's happening here, but what's happening around the world and why this is the number one political issue right now and everything else is downstream of it. I had that conversation with Andrew Wilson, and we're talking about domestic versus foreign policy. Foreign policy is everything. You can't have a domestic policy without a foreign policy. Oh, no, no, no. We have the great geography. We have the great relationship with the weak countries, north and south, fish to our east and west. That's an Otto von Bismarck quote. Sure, sure, sure. But we created a global reality. We were the globalists. We were the ones that enforced this Zionist world order with our Zionist-occupied government, and we had to project force thousands of miles away for far longer than we should have. And we don't have the same military that we had in 1991. Look at this. Trump cut out of New Deal to reopen Strait of Hormuz. Iran and Oman close to finalizing agreement that would see commercial ships charged for passage. Yeah, and it's going to be... It's interesting. It's actually illegal to make it like an official toll. Like you can't do that. It's against international law and stuff. So they're going to do like the same thing they do for the Suez and other places. It's going to be an environmental fee, management fee, you know, traffic fee, like whatever they're going to say, they're going to enforce payment. And it's not really even necessarily about the payment per se. Like the payment, of course, countries, they want to get rich. Iran wants the money, needs the money, desperately been sanctioned forever. I'm sure Oman would love to have the money too. That whole region, they like to have the cash. But it's really about control, and it's about demonstrating control, and it's about taking that control from Israel and the United States who tried to take it for themselves. Because prior to the war, no one controlled it. The Strait of Hormuz was open, open traffic, free to shipping. It was an international waterway. Now it's going to become, you know, regional territorial water. There's an argument, I'm sure, some international law lawyer would go, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And he'd be right. You know what? I don't know exactly the minutia of it, but I understand the concept of that not returning to its original state. And people that are academics and smart and all this stuff, they're still caping, thinking like that we can return to pre-war conditions. That's never going to happen. Like, when they're making Lego videos of you, it's basically over. It's basically over. That's been incredibly effective, by the way. Suleiman, the guy who I've had on the show many times, international journalist, he actually interviewed the people responsible for making those videos. You can watch that on Moral Resistance. Give that a little plug. So we got the Europeans potentially to come in to clear the mines or whatever. I don't even believe that, but it is what it is. We've got the Indian vessel sinking, going down. Let's do a little angel on the shoulder. Let's talk about Trump speaking with the Emir of Qatar. Ooh, very important guy. About de-escalating U.S.-Iran tensions. And that's Trump right here, overhead shot. Please give him a little... Give him a little pitchfork here. Nice little pitchfork there. Give him a goatee, really round it out. There we go. And, you know, he's got an angel thing here, but, you know, maybe he's got a tail too. All right. U.S. President Donald Trump held a phone call today earlier with Qatari Emir Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, during which the pair discussed efforts to de-escalate tensions between the U.S. and Iran. The latter's office says Trump and Sheikh Tamim talked about bridging remaining differences between the U.S. and Iran in order to reach a sustainable diplomatic solution to the crisis, according to the Qatari readout. Here's the reality, what you need to know about what that means right now. The Gulf states, whether that's Qatar, whether that's Saudi Arabia, whether that's Bahrain, they can't take it anymore. UAE, they can't take it anymore. They're literally, it's a glass house, and then you have your like crazy drunk friend who like bribes you, hey, throw these rocks. And you're like, well, no, that makes no sense. That's what they're telling him. MBS said, please stop. The Emir of Qatar said, please stop. And maybe he listens, maybe he doesn't. I don't really think it's up to Trump at this point. Tamim stressed the importance of sticking to diplomacy and ensuring all parties adhere to the commitments made in the MOU. Oh, that's funny. Oh, all the commitments made in the MOU. What does that mean? Oh, ceasefire? Ceasefire in Lebanon? That got violated. Can't do that. No blockade? Immediate pullback of the blockade? No blockade for you? Oh, we got a blockade for you. Oh, sanctions relief. This is a big carrot we always do. Sanctions? We're going to pull that. And we don't even have the authority to do it. We promise things that we can't even do. But the main idea, the main problem that we face is that we told ships via the British Maritime Authority to turn their transponder off and then to go through an alternative route than what was proposed in the MOU and what Trump signed on to. Right. And that was the Persian Gulf Strait Authority. This is all stuff that we agreed to. All right. And then we violated it. And then we said that they violated it. And because we're the U.S. and we control the universe, we get to speak that into reality. I don't really think that's how it works. And maybe that would be how it worked if we did have a king, or we did have an emperor, or empress, or queen or something, right, that ran the country. But we live in a constitutional republic. We have a representative democracy. These people don't represent the interests of the people that voted for them. Because even if this was a war of conquest to take all the resources and have the American empire and do whatever, that's not what the American people voted for. That is a lot closer to what Kamala Harris promised than versus what Donald Trump promised in 2024. But it's exactly what Donald Trump gave us. Think about that. All this stuff we're talking about, the complete insanity day by day. He is King George III. Netanyahu is King George III. Trump's like a regional governor or whatever. But it is the old-timey aristocratic attitude, really just thinking that you can get away with all this and get away with violating your campaign promises in such an extreme way as to where, like, the fallout is already here. The fallout's already happening. I read a thing yesterday about the Groypers coming for the party. And, like, people say, oh, they're coming. They're already here. Like, they're all around you. They're in the walls. Like, it's over for you, establishment. And it doesn't matter how many people fall or get taken out or whatever. It doesn't matter. There's going to be thousands, tens of thousands, millions of Groypers. And that's just the reality. So when you try to fight against that by taking us to yet another neocon war in the Middle East, try to kill more of us or tax more of us or get more of us to kill ourselves or hurt ourselves or do whatever due to this horrible economy, kill our businesses, hurt our families so we can't have children, it only makes the younger generation that much angrier and that much more aware of what has been taken from all of us. This is what we're really starting to get in touch with. And when the unks, when they do the thing, oh, young man, you can't even talk about it. Oh, it's so privileged to even talk about it. We have really been targeted and hurt by the system in a way that you have not, because we grew up under mass media surveillance and propaganda. And due to that, we have an awareness of where we see it everywhere in our lives to a degree where we see the news, we see the liars, we see the people that actually run our government, our Zionist occupied government. We see our King Benjamin Netanyahu visit and all these older people with all the grand strategy and the master plans. And I have the knowledge. I have the truth. All of that stuff, they fall for it. Literally every single time they fall for it. So regardless of your age, regardless of your demographic, regardless of whatever, we have to, as Americans, wake up to this. And it is the young people specifically that are waking up to it, because we don't want to be drafted. They are running AI simulation bids, and they're going to have this done by August 15th. So like within under 2 weeks now, they're going to have the simulations done, or at least ready to be run. And then after that, oh, who knows what's going to happen? Oh, you're crazy. It's never going to happen. Trying to be a victim, trying to be a panicking. Shut up. Like, what are you? 48 years old. You're not getting drafted. I'm 23. And there are millions of young Americans that feel this way. And if you throw us to the wayside, which the GOP, which Trump have already done or has already done, when you treat us this way, we will never return. And this is the problem that they have. It's like, you're selling us poison. And it doesn't matter what the flavor of poison is. And, you know, the Democrats are selling you a dog turd and that's poison too. And our thing tastes good, but it's still a dog turd. We're not eating dog doo-doo anymore. We're not Laura Loomer eating the dog food anymore. We're not eating the dog food the GOP and the Democrats give us. There has to be a better alternative. Because if there isn't an alternative, like, where do you go where you can vote against it? I really want to know. Oh, well, you got to go here because we got to keep our gun rights and our abortion rights and all this stuff. What's going to happen when the Democrats come in and they're able to pass all their insane policies because people on the right didn't stick by their guns, didn't stick by their values, and didn't do what they said they were going to do when they got elected? Will it be the voters' fault again? Oh, well, the voter, you didn't get what you wanted under the Republicans. Oh, they, hey, buddy, we tried our best for you. We did as good a job we could. It's like a George Bush. Wait, fool me once, can't be fooled again. And then, oh, the Democrats are going to hurt you because you didn't vote hard enough. You didn't manage your decline hard enough. You didn't check into hospice long enough. You just want to get it over with. Either way, you're killing yourself. That's really what all this is. So I'm not saying I have the solution or have a, that's right. You know, here's the thing. You know, it's funny. Once you get older, you realize if I had just had orange hair and I just done spray tanned myself and I said, look, if I made those towers fall or I let it happen, whatever happened, Netanyahu would pay me to do it. It's all irrelevant now. I think I could have gotten away with more if it looked like Trump. That's my George Bush impression. I'll workshop that more, but it's Orange W. Bush. It's a big problem. The youth sees it. I don't understand how a lot of the older people don't see it. I know a lot of the older people do as well. Not trying to discriminate. For some reason, when I say the word boomer, people treat me like I'm saying the N-word, okay, with a hard R or something, but I'm not. I'm just saying the neocon spirit tends to originate from that generation of politician, and they've been responsible for what's happened in this country, and the youth are ready to vote against it. I'm just going to read this real quick. I see it right here. Robert Kagan, this is like a think tank guy, establishment guy, real neocon here. Sometimes U.S. intervention is worth blowback. Is he over there right now? Let's just say, I bet he's not. Let's say this guy is a Purple Heart, like five-star general, Master Chief, Space Marine commander. Go back to him, overhead shot. He ain't over there right now. He's like 65 years old. He's morbidly obese, and he wants you to go die for Israel. And I'm sure he's got, you know, a lot of, the hawkish historian. What does that mean? Pro-genocide monster? I just assume. You know, I'm just assuming here. I'm just speculating here. I'll read a little bit of it. Oh, he's a considerable influence to push regime change against Saddam Hussein. Are you undergoing a conversion? Is that fair? I don't think so, because I never denied that blowback was a reality. In fact, my writing shows that when the U.S. is out there acting in the world, Americans tend not even to be aware of the effect of American power on other nations, so they're constantly shocked whenever the use of American power leads to a response. The best example is Japan and Pearl Harbor. Many Americans acted like out of the blue. It was out of the blue when Japan attacked us, when in fact the U.S. pursued policies that likely led to Japanese attack. That is true. But we knew the attack was coming, Robert. And that's the reality. It's just like, I support war over and over and over again. Yes? Well, all right. So let me try to find a quote here. To answer your question, I haven't really fundamentally changed my mind. These are different circumstances. You'd have to assume that I had some kind of doctrine of always invading the Middle East whenever possible, but that has not been my doctrine. In 2003, all right, so this is what everyone's going to do. Pay attention here. This is what I was looking for. In 2003, I thought invading Iraq was justified. I'm ashamed to say that I had such poor judgment. The Iraq war was unnecessary. And then Kagan says, you say it was unnecessary because you don't take seriously the nature of the threat that was posed. What nature, or what was the threat that Saddam posed, the interviewer says? He was a tin-pot dictator of the hollowed-out military. I don't agree with you. He was not just a tin-pot dictator. He was actually special. He had already committed two major acts of aggression against his neighbors. By the way, that's something Iran has never done. Saddam had invaded Iran. He had invaded Kuwait. He says that, dude, we had Saddam invade Iran. We funded and ran the Iran-Iraq war. He says that as if that's some mark against Saddam Hussein. That's the entire point. He was our good boy. He was our soldier. He did what we told him to do. We gave him the chemical weapons and then used the pretext of having the chemical weapons as a means to invade. Think about that. So, like, we're not listening to unks anymore, man. These unks have literally led us to hell. Literally led us to hell, and it's just paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of him justifying and making excuses and talking about, you know, American power, American hegemony. All these things are gone. These people spent the political capital literally for no reason in the desert. But you think about it. Your grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren's future that they could have had, that you could have had, just as family, everyone together, they're taking that from you right now. And they're giving you Trump and Laura Loomer and Mike Huckabee. Does that seem like a fair, equitable exchange? Look at this. The company's making billions from the Iran war. Go ahead and scroll down. We already know about Trump and not just the Iran war and the consequences of that and just general war expanding. You have to look at the element of, well, when your sons get a drone contract, when they get a tungsten contract, when they get a metals contract, that doesn't just happen out of thin air. Oil and gas, we all know this. Critical minerals, we all know this. We're all aware of what's going on. Money has itself become more expensive. But we will revisit all of this and more with Anthony Aguilar coming up. I really want to talk to him about what's going on when it comes to the Indian vessel that was hit, and of course the 14 sailors that were saved, who might be responsible for that attack and why, and of course the attack on Kuwait. Crew, see if we can find more information about what happened in Kuwait. If we can find more information on that, that would be great. These stories are so breaking and so new, I haven't seen coverage of them. Like, I've seen articles and some things, of course, but it hasn't really gone mainstream. I think I have, let's see here. We got 3 minutes left on the clock. Do I have that Eric Doherty clip? No, I'm going to save that for Anthony. That's just too good. I've got the Fox News people doing some pretty wild stuff. And the reality of that is just not going to last much longer because you have shows like this. You have all the other geopolitical interview shows and just other daily broadcasts as to where if you don't have ideological consistency and you're not constantly covering these issues and covering these topics, then it's just not going to end well for you because you'll be shown as to, hey, you know, you did support this war and now you're saying you don't. It's just like that guy in the article. He's like, oh, I'm reasonable now. I'm the interviewer. I'm looking for the truth. Sure. Like that's reality. Like that's real. You're just somebody looking to couch a point. You're looking to try to be brave while remaining inside the framework of the system. You must break your chains. You must break your bonds. You must be crazy, be insane. Pull it up, the way of the samurai. We got to do it in the last 2 minutes here. The way of the samurai is in desperation. It's Lord Nagayoshi, I believe. The way of the samurai. If you look that up, it'll pull up an image. And it even has an InfoWars image as well, still in Google Images. I have that printed out in my garage. 10 men or more cannot kill such a man. Loyalty and diligence are themselves found within desperation. And, you know, who's more desperate? The Americans, we're sitting over here worried about stock market, worried about domestic oil situation, worried about, you know, our creature comforts and our first world problems. And then the Iranians who have been fighting literally proxy groups, powers allied against them by the U.S. for, as Trump says all the time, 47 years. Who is more likely to come out on top of that situation? I'm going to have Anthony Aguilar, Lieutenant Colonel, Green Beret, very accomplished geopolitical analyst as well, on all the big shows. I'll have him joining me shortly here in about 3 minutes after the break. We're going to get into all of this and more. I want to get his predictions, and I want to get his commentary specifically on what's happening in Gaza right now, because this is not talked about enough. They're signaling new things about the Board of Peace. Netanyahu has said that the IDF will only leave Gaza once, the thing is dealt with or all the people are gone or whatever is all Hamas is gone and they declare all the people Hamas. And we've got clips of them saying, well, we're at 70%. All we have to do is clean or cleanse the remaining 30%. It's like cartoon villains, cartoon bad as you can be. We're going to be covering all of that and more after the break. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. I created Power Plant and Methyl Drive. Power Plant is basically the new, better version of Super Male Vitality. Check that out if you like that product from back in the day. I'll see you after this break. Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Rosea, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically that Power Plant formula. If you're looking for something like Super Male Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle, along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. We've got the T3 trifecta iodine, absolute staple of the old network. We've got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the Methylene Blue inside the tallow, incredible antioxidant, methylene blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins, memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the War Room. I am your host, Rex Jones, and we're covering Geopolitical Roundup, the latest news of the war, hopefully not resuming, but we've been talking about this for a while. It's not resuming. It's already happening, already started. World War E, World War Energy, World War Epstein. I'm being joined by Lieutenant Colonel and former Green Beret, Anthony Aguilar, also geopolitical analyst as well, commentator, all-around internet guy. When it comes to stuff like that, you see him on Mario Newfall, you see him on channels like Dialogue Works and others. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing phenomenal. I've got a ton of things I wanted to talk to you about. First off, what's happening with this Indian ship that was hit? We've got 14 people. They're all alive. Thank God. Who did this, Anthony? What happened there?
Well, the Indian ship that was passing through the Strait of Babelmandab, and as we talk about these things now that the Babelmandab Strait is now becoming more part of the conversation, while the Strait of Hormuz is still very much a part of the conversation, let's not lose sight on the importance now that both strategic waterways, both strategic causeways are now having in terms of the overall global impact and the economic impact to not only the United States, but the world. So, you know, we've been discussing quite a bit over the last 5.5 months of this conflict, the Strait of Hormuz, which is here in the Persian Gulf that connects the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman. Now what we're talking about.
Right. Hold on. One second. Crew, can we throw up a big old map? Let's throw up a big old map of the entire region. We'll take a little while to do that. Anthony, I want you to intro this. Yep. So we're talking about the two critical waterways, the Babelmandab and then the Strait of Hormuz. And people don't understand it. It's like the world is having a heart attack right now. It has heart disease. Go ahead and break that down.
Yeah, because, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is critically important for nations that draw resources, energy, fertilizer, helium, crude oil, refined oil, that either bring their goods into the Persian Gulf and or bring them out of the Persian Gulf, which is a large portion of the world. Now, the reason the Strait of Babelmandab is now creating more of a crisis economically, but also in terms of security now for the United States specifically and European nations, but more so if the United States hopes to continue to prosecute this war with Iran, is that the Strait of Babelmandab, which is, you know, off the coast.
Can you see that up
Yemen.
There on the screen? Are you able to see ours yep. there? So can you,
yeah,
can you walk
so
us
we,
through
we,
what's going
we
on?
We almost have the same map. So when you're looking here at the Strait of Babelmandab, here is Yemen. Across the causeway, you have Djibouti. And then within that, you know, the nations within the Red Sea. But what's particular now about the Bab el-Mandab Strait is that it is more narrow than the Strait of Hormuz. Therefore, tactically, more control can be implemented. There aren't multiple routes. There's not a northern route. There's not a southern route. There's not a an alternate route that the United States can sneak vessels through. It's very narrow. And on one side, you have Djibouti, and on one side, you have Yemen. The Yemeni port is very much so controlled by the Houthis. So within the Red Sea then connects to the Suez Canal in Sinai, Egypt, which then connects to the Mediterranean Ocean. So Europe, the United States, any Northern European country or Baltic country that has ships that come through the Mediterranean, through the Suez Canal, through the Strait of Babelmandab, to the Strait of Hormuz, or to other ports in Central or Eastern Asia, now have to go either around Africa, the Cape of Good Hope, around the entirety of Africa, or take alternate routes, which simply add days or weeks to the voyage, or in some cases are completely unnavigable. So looking at the situation now with this Indian vessel that was struck and by all reports by the Indian government was sunk. That's the report that we have right now. Ship was hit. Ship was sunk. The maritime sailors were rescued. Thank God. But the ship was sunk. That was most likely done by, the Ansar Allah or the Houthis. And
What was the intent of that attack?
Exactly. So if you're the naval commander of the Houthi naval force and you are planning operations just like an American or an Iranian or a Israeli military commander would plan, you have your intent from higher headquarters, which is control the Strait of Hormuz. Do not allow any ships through. unless we, Ansar Allah, via the voice of through the Houthi movement, you know, the Houthis are kind of the, not kind of, they are. The Houthis are more of the government arm. Ansar Allah is the military arm. Consider something comparable to the IRA and Sinn Féin. You have a government representative arm, which very much has representation in the government of Yemen, which the Houthis do. And then you have a military arm being that of Ansar Allah. So if you are the naval force commander of Ansar Allah forces along the Yemeni coast, the purpose for targeting and then sinking that ship is to send a very clear message. Because remember, we've talked about this before, Alex. The elements of national power that every nation on earth exercises, whether they know it or not, every nation on earth, whether you're Yemen or you're the United States, exercise the dime. Diplomacy, information, the military, and the economy. And within information, you have misinformation, you have disinformation, which we see the United States exercising a lot of disinformation, right, especially with Donald Trump.
Well, let me ask, because the picture that Trump paints of the Iranians, this is like, I call it the Looney Tunes war, because it's just so insane. It literally is the Lego video war on the other side. But for us, Trump will come out and say, like, they're obliterated, defeated, they have no military, whatever. But we see this, like, mosaic defense being implemented, not just of their country, but also of the other, like, axis of resistance powers, like the Yemeni or Houthi, whatever you want to call them, or whatever we call them here. Do you think it's fair to say that the other axis of resistance countries have been factored into the Iranian mosaic defense plan? And what do you think of these recent attacks on Kuwait? I'm going to read this from the New York Times. Kuwait says it downed Iranian drones as Mideast braces for possible escalation. Kuwait said that Iranian forces had launched a wave of drone attacks on its shores early Saturday as the Middle East braced for a very possible situation or escalation in fighting after President Trump said he was preparing to hit Iran. Very technical term he uses here, Anthony, very hard. You know, that's our peace president for you. The Kuwaiti military said that it had detected and destroyed multiple drones in its airspace since dawn and that Iran had targeted critical infrastructure in the country's north. So this would be, you know, not a direct departure of policy because they have engaged in attacks that have not been retaliatory. But like, is this Iran? Is this not Iran? Is this, you know, maybe another country in the Middle East or us trying to escalate or start something up that wasn't happening? What's going on?
The phase or period of simply retaliatory attacks from Iran being the limit of attacks that we see in response from the from Iran, that phase, that timeline of war is over. Iran is now exercising their military capability throughout, which is now legitimate targets right, in the region. And consider that we've had, you know, when this war started, when we were talking about, okay, it's the United States and Israel versus Iran, and that's where we want to keep it. Well, as I've said from the 28th of February, this is a war that once started in the way that was started, preemptively, without justification, without provocation, done in a way that immediately escalated the war from just a finite goal to a massive conflict in the making, has now absolutely become that.
Yes.
Remember, this war was supposed to take a couple days or maybe a few weeks.
No, you're being racist. We're not supposed to watch videos of what the president said when the war started. You're not telling the truth right now. This has been going on for 47 years, and it might take another 20 years because that's what I've seen, you know, the Air Force generals on Fox News say. No. But you're right. You can literally roll the tape of what they said, and they said that they would do this, Anthony, by killing the Pope. What do you think of that? Like the Islamic equivalent.
Yeah, the onset of this war, the operational and strategic process or what I would say tactics at the operational level, operational approach at the strategic level, were grossly underestimated by the United States, grossly overestimated U.S. capability, and grossly misunderstood and misinterpreted what Iran's response would be and how Iran would respond, but also the capability that Iran has. And I think it's interesting to note now that the attacks that we've seen in Kuwait really attacks anywhere within the region. I think it's interesting to see. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's kind of the breakdown of all of the missile capabilities that Iran has, and then the area to which all of these missile capabilities can reach. This being Iran, that outer ring being all the way up into northern Europe, all the way into Central Africa, all the way into East Asia. And so everything from the Fatah 360 missile all the way up to the Qamshir 4, which can range up to 2,500 kilometers, is far outside the range of what any U.S., European, or Israeli interceptor can intercept. The best we got in terms of ballistic long-range interception is the THAAD land-based system, the Aegis sea-based system, or the Patriot interceptor missile system, which to intercept, you get a maximum range of about 200 kilometers. Iran has munitions that can range up to 2,500, maybe a little bit more if the wind is right, in range. But here's the other thing. And if you listen to Pete Hegseth and you take what he's saying is true, then I got a bridge to sell you in the desert. Pete Hegseth said that the Navy was destroyed. Well, Iranians' Persian Gulf aged Navy was destroyed in terms of their sea fleet, their surface fleet. They still have submarine capability. They still have asymmetric drone capability. They still have fast boat, swift boat capability, which can fire anti-ship missiles just like a multi-million dollar warship. They still have a naval maritime capability in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, they also still possess, which the United States hasn't yet touched, the Northern Fleet in the Caspian Sea. And people might say, so what? The Caspian Sea is landlocked. What are they going to do with that? Well, here's the thing. With the Caspian Sea fleet, the Northern Fleet of the Iranian IRGC Navy, they have the Northern Fleet, which has corvettes, missile boats, support vessels. They have seven Sena-class fast attack missile ships, which all have the capability to fire RGM-84 Harpoon missiles. And the Chinese, they are equipped with the Chinese C-802 missile system, which is intercept.
Okay, hold on. This is key because we talk about this on the show all the time. So they have Chinese anti-ship missiles. How did they get those? Did they buy those? Were they given those missiles? Were they given those recently? How does that work?
Well, believe it or not, Iran has had relations with a lot of other countries, even during U.S. sanctions.
Right.
Iran maintained military cooperation, military relations with China, Russia, France, believe it or not. The entire Northern Fleet of the Iranian Navy, their Sena-class warships, were French warships that they purchased, that they refitted with Chinese technology. They didn't steal it. They didn't steal it like Israel did. They got it through military sales and military cooperation. Same thing now with what China is providing to Iran directly in their missile capability and their intelligence capability. So despite the fact that the United States has had sanctions on Iran for the better part of two decades, other countries have still exchanged for India being a clear partner. The ship that the U.S. sunk, the Navy warship that the U.S. sunk in the very beginning of this conflict that was not carrying any munitions whatsoever, that killed upwards nearly 400 Iranian sailors on an unarmed warship,
yes,
was returning from a global joint exercise with India.
Well, let's break that down because this is one of those incidents, and we're going to cover Gaza and Lebanon as well. I'll just throw out kind of more like domestic to there, local to there. Of course, the Red Crescent aid workers, I think it was 13 of them that were just gunned down in ambulances, in like the nurse outfits. I forget what that's called, like literally like in uniform. The only reason why we know about it is because it was all on videotape and they lied about it on record. But when we're talking about stuff like this, Anthony, what were you just saying right there? Talking about the situation with Iran?
Well, you know, so when you look at the overall situation in terms of the United States wants to preach to the American people, to the American citizens, that
right,
Iran is this isolated, incapable country that we're going to easily bomb into the Stone Age. We've sunk their Navy. We downed their Air Force. We are fighting this war at our will, and we can end it anytime we want. The only reason we're continuing to fight is because Donald Trump doesn't just want a deal. He wants a better deal. Well, the truth is that the Iranian military is very well equipped, very capable, and they still have a lot of capability, both in their missiles and in maritime capability, whether it's naval out of the Caspian Sea. Why do you think Israel was so concerned with Iran's northern fleet at the onset of this war that they committed some of their missiles to downing or sinking Iranian ships in the Caspian Sea, which they did not succeed, but they attempted to? Why would they do that if it wasn't a threat? It is a threat because the Iranian warships in the Caspian Sea have a ballistic missile capability that can launch ballistic missiles that can range Israel. So right. To say that they're incapable or they're defeated is simply a lie. And it's important to show that as the U.S. missile arsenal continues to deplete, the Iranian missile capability continues to increase. And the Iranian missiles may not cost as much as a U.S. missile because of the high prices of the military-industrial complex, but it doesn't mean they're just as capable. It doesn't mean they're just as plentiful. It doesn't mean they can't reach targets and destroy them. Ask any American soldier in bases in Kuwait or in Iraq how effective an Iranian missile is.
This is the thing, right? You can say it for both Iran and for Israel. The reason why they're able to do these wars is because it's their region, right? They're fighting over it. The reason why it's so hard for us to quote unquote win is because thousands of miles away. Ultimately, like, how are we supposed to hold ground, hold territory, and control it without constantly being under threat from the people that live there? That seems to be very simple to me, but it doesn't seem like our leadership class really, you know, a lot of the voters seem to understand that, even though they got excited about and voted for the prospect of not doing this anymore and having peace. And I don't want to be gaslit on that. I don't want to forget about that. That is super key and important. I was not thinking about this 2 years ago. And you know what? I should have known. I knew pretty much immediately once I found out about Gaza that everything was, like you say all the time, a fugazi, right? But, you know, it's just when you wake up to the geopolitical reality of the World War III and the genocide and what we pay for directly, it just doesn't make any sense. I'm not trying to make like a grand moral statement about any of this stuff. I'm not some like grand moral guy. But what I will say is this is retarded. Like, seriously, like you have to really look at it from the lens of they are doing something for no reason out of spite to hurt the taxpayer. It's like, how can I make the American taxpayer suffer more? How can I make the American soldier suffer more? Oh, I know. I'll lie about having air defense and send them off to essentially a tin can base to get destroyed. And then I'll make people in America say that's patriotic. What do you think about that?
Well, platforms like yours and the ownership that you hold the administration and the media to, because the media, the mainstream media, as they call it, will hope that all of us soon forget the things that were said 4 to 5 months ago. You don't forget it. And it, you know, it is my hope, and I have every reason to believe that you will continue to hold the truth at the higher than the propaganda and gaslighting right. We're getting from mainstream media. And here's why. Because going all the way back to April of 2025, before Venezuela happened, before we started this war with Iran, I started looking at this because the tone from the American perspective started to sound a lot like Israel. A lot of our diplomatic language, a lot of our information in terms of coming from our administration into the world ethos began to sound a lot like Israel. And that concerned me because I've been to Gaza and I've seen what Israel is capable of, and that is not a path that we should go down. So going all the way back to April of 2025, I started keeping track of this little chart of mine on things that our president has said and things that our nation has then done based on what our president has said. And going all the way back to April of 25, more than a year ago, Trump started to threaten the bombing of Iran. And at that time, all of the talking heads and all of the analysts and the news stations all came on and said, oh, he's just talking. We wouldn't do that. That's Donald Trump playing 9,000-D chess right. and getting them to think this, but we're really going to do that. Well, I know that Donald Trump can't play 9,000-D chess. I don't think Donald Trump can play checkers. So when you look at the fact of what he was saying and the road we were being led down, to me, that sounded a lot like Israel feeding us what to say and pulling us like a dog on a leash right into this war, right into what we did in Venezuela. It shouldn't be lost on anybody that Netanyahu visited the United States and left back to Israel the night before we conducted this operation in Venezuela. It shouldn't be lost on anybody that Netanyahu visited the United States and left a couple days before we started the attacks on Iran. That shouldn't be lost on anybody in terms of the connection.
So he literally, he comes over here as the royal king, as the owner of America, and then the next day we get in a massive war. Repeatedly. Break this down.
He visits. He visits for two things. One, to reassure that the United States, through Donald Trump, is kissing the ring. Kiss the ring, America. Who's in charge? Two, to get his laundry done. We know he has his laundry done at the White House.
So literally.
You can predict a Netanyahu visit, based on when the laundry's due and when we're probably going to start the next war.
Wow. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's this sick parade because here's the thing. This, political plantation they keep people on both sides of the aisle, Democrat, Republican. Oh, it's a war. We hate each other. Oh, gun rights. Ah, to trade taxes. All this stuff. The reality is they all stand up and give him like 12 standing ovations every single time he goes to Congress. They don't agree on anything else. They don't even agree on the Pledge of Allegiance like that. They don't like, no. Like, seriously. It's quite wild.
You know, we should take all of the strong dissenting, party bicameral, fissure causing issues in the United States and just get Netanyahu to say it and the entire Congress would get behind it.
Yep. You're right. You're right. He could fix it overnight. You know, they'd be able to fix the roads. They'd be able to, you know, fix the airline companies, like whatever people are struggling with, because when he snaps his fingers, lightning comes out. And that's the reality for everybody in our executive branch, legislative branch. I don't really know about the judicial, but I mean, if you look at the laws that get passed, they're all in the service of Israel. So does it even matter?
And I'll tell you, as much as that is true, to think that our military strategy or our military resources or our missiles or the most important thing are America's sons and daughters who are sitting in bases right now. People think when they hear about Kuwait, right? How many, just off the top without looking it up, if someone said U.S. bases in Kuwait, how many do you think the average American thinks that we have manned U.S. service members on bases in Kuwait? How many would you think?
Maybe 2,000 or something.
No, numbers of soldiers, but how many bases?
Maybe let's say three or four.
Three or four, right? No,
yeah.
Eight.
Wow.
Eight. We have eight currently manned operational bases in Kuwait, which the totality of the manned bases, prior to about a month ago when we withdrew a lot of forces from Camp Arif John, which is where Army Central is located, Army Central's forward headquarters. If you consider the totality of those eight bases in Kuwait, we had upwards of about 4,000.
And they can't be defended, and they're at risk and getting blown up. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with Anthony Aguilar. Thank you so much.
Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best, and he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com
Alexjones.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900. And let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price, price of the metal in the ground. Manufacturers, miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is, type in what's wholesale gold and silver, and then you get it from them with a little processing fee, and then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900, 720-605-3900.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We're having an interesting conversation today with Green Beret Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar, geopolitical commentator, analyst, about the reality of Schrodinger's borders, the idea of other countries having to abide by rules, international law, and peace treaties and things like that, and Israel, who just kind of gets to decide to take territory whenever they want. And people in America are very relatively aware of Gaza now and the horror and atrocity and genocide that's happened there. But when you talk to them about Lebanon, because it's happening now, there is still that period as to where people don't want to accept it. So the first thing I want to ask you, Anthony, how do the Israelis view their border, meaning like how they're able to, you know, do kind of manifest destiny and do this Greater Israel project? How do they get away with it? How do they see it?
Well, right now, in terms of reality on the ground, this is how Israel sees their border. You know, this is here's Israel. You have Israel here. That's the border. That blue line is the border between Israel and Lebanon. And right. All of that light orange is where Israel currently occupies in Lebanon, where every citizen has been forced out, where right. Israel completely controls that entire swath from the Mediterranean all the way up along the east to the Litani River. And in doing so, these are the attacks just since what we've seen from the beginning of this latest conflict to what we've seen even as of late of yesterday. This is a map of those of attacks that are taking place throughout Lebanon. So this, you know, the Litani River is way down here. You know, and these attacks are going all the way up here. So when you see where these attacks are taking place, Israel continues to attack throughout.
And really quick, they say 20,000, other estimates say 50,000. We're talking about between 20 and 50,000 homes destroyed, right?
That's in Lebanon.
Right.
Let's remember that Israel is still lying waste every day through bombardment and destruction in Gaza.
Right. Talk
about
what
Israel started doing, what Israel started doing last week? They have begun to dig up the rubble and dump it into the sea because they don't want international, investigatory bodies, or Israel knows that one day, sooner or later, they're going to lose the plot.
So like a serial killer, they're trying to hide the crime, like Dexter.
They're hiding the crime scene.
Wow. So
because they know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That accountability is coming. So they're trying to hide the crime.
Right. And the idea, I played somebody yesterday who was saying, oh, it's wonderful. We see nothing but the beach now, referring to the place where a city used to be. And that's quite a sick attitude. This man, I refuse to call him a gentleman, this individual, not even a man, an individual, he says that one of our lives, kind of like Ben-Gavir said, for every one of our mothers that weep, a thousand of your mothers will weep. This guy said, for every one of our lives, we are worth 10 million of you. No one around the world various groups, everybody's tribal, everyone has aspects of racism, whatever, it is what it is, people are people. But no other group has ever viewed the rest of the world in this way. This is a completely insane idea that's going to generate World War III. The idea that you have manifest destiny and you can conquer another people in the age of the internet where everyone can see the crime. It just, it doesn't work. You can't do live stream genocide. What do you think?
Well, the question of should you be able to do live stream genocide and simply get away with it? The answer is no, you should not be able to. The sad reality right now, because you have world leading nations like the United States who continue to allow Israel to do this, is that as of right now, they are getting away with it.
You're totally right. They are totally getting away with it. We've got to stop and we got to expose the crimes right now. We got one more segment with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Lee has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back to the War Room, getting into the geopolitical reality and covering Lebanon, Gaza, the genocide, ethnic cleansings going on there right now. We were talking on the break about something truly horrific. They're trying to, like a serial killer, erase the evidence of the genocide that was just committed and still being committed in Gaza right now in Palestine. Anthony, what is this bulldozer armada?
So the Israelis have always used the D9 bulldozer, which is manufactured by Caterpillar, which is a U.S.-based company in California, which is strongly supported by the U.S. government in providing these to Israel at premium low cost. And these bulldozers are now being used to literally shove the debris into the ocean, meaning the Mediterranean off of the coast of Gaza. And they're doing this, to clear Gaza, for the Operation Sunrise or Project Sunrise, the rebuilding of Gaza by Jared Kushner. But also to erase the evidence, because in all of that rubble, in all of that piles of concrete and rebar and dirt and debris are thousands of Palestinian bodies. Thousands dead, not in tunnels, there's the deaths that we know of that have actually been accounted for, but there are thousands of children and women and mothers and fathers and families buried in that rubble.
And they deny it. This is the thing that's truly sick. And this is what I think about people that think that they're going to be in news and media and that you backed and supported this and denied that it was happening when it was happening. I mean, when I found out about this stuff, this is what got me politically active again, because I don't understand how you can't stand against it. And all the people that have said, oh, it's only a few thousand, it's only like 30,000. Like, you know how deranged you are when you say that, when people can see the aerial footage of cities like Rafa, where it's just like you have a magic eraser on a board and you just go, toot. And then it's gone. The city is gone. They turn it into Bikini Bottom. They turn it into the desert. And it wasn't the desert before. It was a city. And they want to lie to you and they want to make you hate the people. And they want to make you think they always lived in tents. They didn't. Talk about this, Anthony. They live in tent cities now.
Yes. And the thing is, what when I was in Gaza, the military operations in Rafah and Tal al-Sultan were at their height, to where the IDF were transitioning north of Rafah into Mawasi. So they had pretty much laid waste to all of Rafah and all of Tal al-Sultan. And at that point, they were simply bombing Rafah. They were bombing the rubble because there were still live, hanging on to life, nearly dead Palestinians buried in the rubble that they didn't want to be responsible for. So they were bombing the rubble. I saw this with my own eyes.
They were double tapping the rubble.
Triple tapping, quadruple tapping. They were using U.S. bombs, you know, at $200,000 a piece to bomb rubble, to kill the inhabitants within the rubble because they didn't die in the initial bombing. And Israel was then already moving on to the north. So Israel's tactics on the ground in Gaza is sweep through on the ground and isolate the town or the city. They're not going to go in on foot because they know that they're not going to be successful. So they isolate the city and then they start bombing it. And then once they start bombing it, they bomb a certain amount, then they move in and hold and then start to bomb more. And that's how they conduct tactics on the ground. They are not a capable, competent, courageous, moral, war-fighting army. They are the antithesis of all of that. They are cowards who are immoral, who use the most barbaric of tactics that have been outlawed by international law and every international consortium in international law and peacekeeping, and they violate all of it to bomb and destroy and kill.
I think this is key.
And then when they're done with that, they bomb it again.
Yes. I think this is key because you pointed out earlier, you said like we sound a lot like the Israelis now with our foreign policy and what we're doing, thinking you can win solely from the air campaign, thinking that you can bomb and win, you can get this victory over the population, you can make them capitulate. It sounds a lot like their foreign policy. You know, it sounds like how they fight wars, because we learned from them, didn't we?
What's becoming more and more clear to me is that Israel, and I'm not saying this in terms of hyperbole, I'm saying this literally. Israel is now controlling and dictating American military strategy in this war with Iran. And here's why I'll say that. Every senior military leader we've heard from, who was it last week? The U.S. Air Force four-star general, Grinkovich, Air Force.
Yeah.
U.S. Air Force General Grinkovich, the commander of EUCOM, European Command.
Oh, he has to decide. He has to decide between the U.S. and Israel, which to defend. Go ahead. Bingo. This is key.
That guy has said, hey, Mr. President, it's now no longer a question of deciding between protecting our assets and then are we going to help Ukraine or are we going to help Israel? The question has now become, because we are so depleted in our THADs and our missiles and our SASMs and our ATACMs, we're now so depleted that the question is now, are we going to defend Israel? Or are we going to defend American service members and U.S. interests? Well, you have General Dan Kane, the Air Force four-star general, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who went to the president last week and said, this idea of bombing Iranian power plants and civil infrastructure is not a good idea, sir. Okay, well, if the European command commander, the central command commander, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and therefore every commander under them is telling President Trump that this is not a good idea, then who's telling him it's a good idea? And then you turn one page of that book of horrors and you see who is now directly running the military industrial complex. Look up right now. You can Google it. I can't remember the guy's name, but just yesterday, the former director of Mossad, the former director of Mossad was put in charge of one of the largest U.S. defense production companies in the country.
Is that linked with the new NDAA? Is that linked with the section 219?
It's linked to the new NDAA. And it's my hypothesis. There he is right there.
Yeah, I'll read the headline.
Look up Ondas and how big they are as a defense contractor. And here's Tony's theory. Here's my theory. This is not fact. This is not based on any evidence that I've seen, but this is my theory. The National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1217 within the Senate passing. Remember, it's already passed the House. That's right. That's a done deal. That is a fait accompli. Section 217, or excuse me, 219 has already passed. That's a done deal. In the Senate, the NDAA, section 1217, they've already agreed on that. They already have over 60. The point of departure on the NDAA to finish up around the fringes to get it to pass the Senate isn't based on section 1217 anymore. That's got the 60 votes it needs. It's going to pass. So when that passes on the 1st of October, the Secretary of Defense has until the 6th of October to appoint a chief executive over the U.S.-Israel Defense and Technology Cooperation of branch or division, whatever that's going to be. The law requires it. Who do you think he's going to appoint? I think they're going to appoint that guy who they just put in charge of Ondas, which is the one of the largest defense manufacturers in the country, certainly one of the largest.
That sounds
in the world.
like a bad plot, like a Marvel movie, like a villain that invents a super weapon or something like that. That's pretty crazy. It's Skynet-esque also as well. Just the
mark my words that in the coming days, as we approach October, that guy who is the former head of Mossad, who is now the chief executive of Ondas, an American company, will soon be the guy in the executive position over Section 1217.
Okay, this is a key prediction. I want to go from there. I want to look at Section 219, formerly, what was it? What was it before? Section 224?
224, formerly.
Yeah, so they're real sneaky. They changed the name on us a little bit, but people are aware.
That was on purpose.
People are aware of it. People are also aware, kind of morbidly, that we all know it's going to pass and that Trump is going to sign it. Do you think that we got him up there again? The owner of the team, if we're a basketball team, he's the owner of the team, the owner of Team America. He's the real president. That's what Uncle Sam is now. It's Uncle Netanyahu coming home to visit. All hail to the king. How much power is he going to be able to truly exert? Are we going to have those troops on the ground? Are we going to be making bombs for years into decades, and we're just not going to be able to shake this grip that they have on our military-industrial complex?
Well, here's the thing to consider: the reality of the military-industrial complex and its influence on decisions made by operational and tactical commanders. At the strategic level, the national strategic level, when the United, this is just, I'll break it down by service. I'll just focus on the Army for now. I won't focus on all of the Department of Defense because that would take a week. Let's just say the United States Army. Every year in the National Defense Authorization Act, the United States Army and each service comes to the chairman and says, hey, here's our strategy for the next 5, 10, 15 years. Army 2030, Army 2028, Army 2040, the strategy.
Right.
And to do that, we're going to need all this. Well, the chairman, the staff within the joint staff that represents all the services brings all those things together. They're called commander's visions, commander's strategies. And puts all that together into the national mission strategy. That national mission strategy then dictates how the United States Department of Defense, how the United States military will fight now and future war. And they present that to the Congress to say, hey, Congress, when the Secretary of Defense presents the National Defense Authorization Act, here's all the things that go into it. So when you hear about the chief of staff of the Army, the chief of naval operations, the chief of the Air Force, the commandant of the Marine Corps, these four-star generals and admirals, when they go to brief Congress, when they go to testify to Congress, they're testifying on their strategy that goes into the overall national mission strategy. But here's the thing that you don't hear about often that is true, because I was a part of it. I did this in my last job as the capability manager for special operations within the U.S. Army. It was part of my job. When you put this whole vision together where you say, hey, the commander wants this type of missile, this type of mortar, this type of tank to fight this type of battle. Well, the military-industrial complex, whether it's Raytheon or Ondas or General Dynamics or whoever it is, they, by law, get to see that national mission strategy because they participate in the production of the weapons to make that strategy. I can say all I want. Hey, by next year, I want to be a ninja and be a sword master and throw Chinese right. throwing stars. Okay. Well, you need a sword and you need Chinese throwing stars. Well, if the only person in the world that makes swords and Chinese throwing stars says, no, we don't want you to do that. We want you to fight this way. Well, all they have to do is say, we're not going to give you Chinese throwing stars and swords. Right. Well, then I have to completely shift my strategy on how I'm going to fight. And guess who's right there waiting with a strategy to dictate how we fight? The military-industrial complex. So when the commander presents his vision, the military-industrial complex comes back and says, you can't have that, you can't have that, that's going to cost this much, that's going to make 10 years to make. If you want that, it's going to have to be under this. And then so that strategy changes based on what the military-industrial
complex is. So the people that write the checks are in charge, not just from a perspective of like logistics and supply, but from a command operation perspective.
Absolutely.
The ability of the military-industrial complex
to either produce or make what the military customer wants then shapes the military strategy, because we are held hostage by the military-industrial complex.
Right. Yeah, I'm just writing that down. That's a good point. Do you think it's truly ours? Do you think theirs will merge with ours? What does that necessarily mean? We know the Israeli economy is massively inflated by their own defense industry, and we talk about ourselves not being able to get these critical minerals. I guess they're real geopolitical wizards, though. So I'm sure they'll be able to find the rare earths. Is there a domestic industry not threatened by all the wars they do, or will they just become ours, take over ours? How will that work?
So the real, you know, you've heard it often said in a way to kind of surmise it in parlance, that this NDAA is the merging of the two militaries.
Right.
That is true, but what that won't look like is Private Smith sitting next to Private Netanyahu in an infantry squad in the 82nd Airborne. What this means is the merger of our militaries at the institutional level of the military-industrial complex, meaning what's ours is theirs, what's theirs is ours. Well, we already give them quite a bit, so the only one that's winning from this is Israel.
Right. So that's what the NDAA truly means. It's that merger as to where the financial interests of their own military-industrial complex gain a command and control function over our
It says it. I mean, it says it verbatim. That is verbatim the verbiage of Section 219 and Section 1217, which are provisions within the NDAA that once the NDAA is approved becomes law. That is the verbiage of those two provisions that closely mirror both the House and the Senate versions. And then it's the merger, the synchronization, so when you think about the cooperation, the merger, the synchronization, the blending of the two, that's exactly what it is. It's not a conspiracy theory to say that that's what's happening. It's exactly what the verbiage of those provisions that are soon going to become one into the NDAA, soon will be. It's a reality. It is the truth of the matter. And in that, what that turns into, the true danger in that is that, let's say I have a close friend and she and I, you know, we're not dating, but we're kind of on and off. And, you know, if we go out, we pay Dutch, she pays for her, I pay for mine. And, but then it gets a little more serious and then we're dating, you know, it's getting a little more, but, and then we get married, but we still have separate accounts. And then at some point we join our accounts. Well, no more is there the, you know, hey, can I buy this? Well, one of the other can ask the other, hey, can I buy this out of a courtesy? But at that point, if you're pissed off at one of the other, you don't have to ask to go ring up that credit card or spend money out of that joint account. And now imagine one in those relationship. I'm not going to say who, because I want to be equal here. One of the two in the relationship isn't working and relies completely on the other for everything and then says, I want this. And the breadwinner says, no, you can't have
it. And it's
that.
Like trying
and
to so burn the
says,
house
well,
down.
I'm pissed at you, so I'm going to go spend it all.
Yeah.
That's what we're giving Israel.
Wow. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a good analogy. I here's the thing. I like what the Zionists say, like from their own words from Adam Sosnick. I'll just quote here. I think of America as my mom and Israel as my grandma. So, of course, I'll choose my mom over my grandma in a life or death situation. That's what he says, right? But then it would just go to reason that, Adam, if you have a loaf of bread and both your mom and your grandma are hungry, then you're going to share that loaf of bread, and whoever you care about or think is more hungry, you're going to give that food to. So, like, it's just, it shouldn't be an American issue. We shouldn't be over there. That's the reality of all this stuff. It's not even a radical solution. It's just we got to get out. How do you see, just like a white pill perspective, what could somebody do, a prospective future American leader, to get us out of the Middle East? We got 5 minutes.
For a future American leader to get us out of the Middle East?
Yeah. Is it possible?
Well, I think that any future American leader that wants to be a representative of politics and represent this country should soon start to realize that relations with Israel as they currently are not beneficial to the United States, and that we should treat that relationship with the same amount of skepticism and hostility that we have other relationships in the past, and that we should start to look into the future of things like normalization of relations with countries like China, Russia, Iran, India, Pakistan are in our interests globally and worldwide. And that if nations like Israel, and I'm not saying Israel would be the only one now or in the future, but if nations that act like Israel that want to say that any of those relationships are bad and that we should put all of our eggs into their basket, we should see that as a threat. And
well, hold on. They have relationships with all those countries. They have very good relationships with all those countries. And then we're fighting those countries through them while they grift off those countries. It truly is impressive. It really is. Right. It's a crazy Ponzi scheme. It's wild.
It is incredible. It is an incredible Ponzi scheme that goes back to the inception of Israel that I think right now in this administration, what I could say, if there's anything to look back on in a silver lining of this administration, it is that it has truly been exposed for what it is. Now, as an American society, as an American government, if our Congress isn't going to see it for what it is and realize the truth, well, that's a whole other problem that we have to deal with here at home. But to say that we now don't see the truth and the reality for what it is, we do. I don't think there's one American that can't look at the truth and say, yep, it's that. Now, how that American decides to act on it, we see many different ways. We see, oh, well, it's true, but here's this list of reasons as to why that's okay. Or it's true, but here's all of these things that it could be worse if not.
Yes.
And the truth of the matter is that looking at it for what it is, and if anyone thinks that where we currently stand in our foreign policy or our military foreign policy, that we're putting America or Americans first right now, you're simply lying to yourself. We need politicians and a government that's willing to put America and Americans first. And I say that not America only, but America first, just like any sovereign nation would. What sovereign nation wouldn't put itself and its own people first? A nation that is completely owned by another nation, in our case, Israel.
Yeah, and the war itself is illegal. So, like, people can disagree on policy, but you can't disagree on the facts of international law when it comes to this. And here's the thing. They didn't kill their own elementary schoolers. If you believe that,
that's right.
If you justify that somehow, if you make excuses for it, whether that's on accident or on purpose, it's unjustifiable. And anybody out there in the audience that says, oh, no, well, maybe Iran did it. My president said he's not sure. There's an investigation. That's like him shooting somebody in front of Fifth Avenue, that classic example that he gives, and he says he could get away with it. That's what bombing that school is. And then the subsequent war that's resulted from it, the World War. And like it's insane. Go ahead. We got like a minute left.
What do the war hawks come back and they say? Well, they say, oh, well, the reason we have to continue this war, whether regardless of how it started, regardless, maybe they didn't have nukes, you know, the Lindsey Grahams, you know, the late Lindsey Grahams and others that would say, well, we're fighting them now because look, they're attacking us. Well, I ask the question, both in Iraq and in Kuwait, between those two countries alone, just those two, and there's many more, between the six active manned operational missile launching bases in Iraq, six, and the actively manned logistics and missile launching bases in Kuwait, eight, just those two alone. Imagine, if you will, if while we're in this war with Iran, if Iran had bases in Canada and Mexico that were actively targeting and firing missiles at us.
You're totally right. We would never accept it, and that is the key. It's a modern Cuban Missile Crisis. We're on the other side of it. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Colonel Green Beret, Anthony Aguilar. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You too.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Hope everyone's having a phenomenal afternoon, evening out there in America, across the world, wherever you're catching the broadcast. This is the Alex Jones Network at AJN Live. Please share live links, the feed. Of course, we always have phenomenal clips that come out during and after all of the shows. Your friends, your family, they need to know what you know. And the easiest way to do that is just share the network, share the information. We also have the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. Should you choose to accept your mission of supporting this broadcast, this operation, you can accept it right there at thealexjonesstore.com. So many of you guys have reached out and have said the Power Plant and Methyl Drive products are amazing. I just want to do a brief rundown on what that is. I've created two products to be taken, you know, just really for mitochondrial health, really for exercise, really for, you know, achieving a new level of supplementation. I got Power Plant and Methyl Drive with the CoQ10, the PQQ, the Rhodiola Roja, Golden Root, Cordyceps, Zinc, Magnesium, Boron, and so much more. I've got it available for you right there in the Power Drive bundle. Power Plant is kind of my evolved take on Super Male Vitality. So if you look at the two formulas, let's just go to the Power Plant page for a second. I want to break this down for the audience. If you go to the formulas and you look at the old Super Male ingredient product, it was a bunch of very powerful herbs, but most of them were luteinizing hormone mimetics, right? So like things like, I believe, like Tribulus terrestris, Pseudogeia rosea, stuff like that. I'm not particularly a fan of things like that because although they are very strong, it's not exactly super sustainable. With anything that goes super high, you know, from another input, it's a negative feedback loop as well, potentially in the future. So what we have here in the Power Plant is really a formula designed to attenuate the modern problem, which is the real reason why your testosterone is so low, the real reason why you're tired, the real reason why you don't have energy to exercise or work right, is because you don't have the high-quality zinc in the right form, you don't have the high-quality selenium in the right form, and you don't have the right-quality boron in the right form. That boron citrate right there, there are studies that showed over 30% increase in free testosterone from taking boron. We've got that available as well as the zinc. If you have one of these very common deficiencies in the West, which is the whole reason why you supplement, these are dietary supplements, you're supplementing your diet, you can take the zinc and boron and selenium found in this product and attenuate that deficiency efficiently with the proper correct form of each vital nutrient. We've also got the adaptogens in there, which is Rhodiola Roja, which lowers cortisol. And you can look at ashwagandha, does that through a similar mechanism, but it's not ashwagandha. I had a caller call in earlier about that and said, oh, I don't take the Power Plant because it has ashwagandha. Well, of course, talk to your doctor. All these things are very real. They have mechanisms of action. It's very important, especially if you take other medication or just medication in general, because these are dietary supplements, not meds. Check with your doctor. But this is a phenomenal ingredient. Do your research on it. It's called Golden Root, also called Arctic Root. The Vikings used it. It has a very long history. This is also something the Russians studied, by the way. This is something the Russians studied. That this is where the term adaptogen comes from, is in large part from Rhodiola Roja. All of that and more found in the Power Plant formula. Methyl Drive has the CoQ10, the PQQ, and really when you have methylene blue combined, all three of those are just incredible products. The synergy there is unbelievable. You can try it once. You can sign up for it. I'd really, really suggest if you're older, checking out the Methyl Drive. And if you're younger and you really want that exercise enhancement, in my opinion, that's kind of what I made it for. Anecdotally, you can get the Power Plant. TheAlexJonesStore.com. We got the water filtration. We got the shower head. If you're not filtering your water, you're pretty insane. You're pretty crazy. Look, I got filtered water right here. I'm going to use that as an excuse to take a sip and put a little water in my mouth. We have the best t-shirts, the best apparel, best hats, best everything at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Now, I want to go into this, and I was going to play with Anthony, but we'll play it here. It's just when you watch Fox News, it's like you're stepping into an alternate reality nearly every single time. So I want to play clip number 21, and then we're going to kind of pick it apart. Let's go into that.
Operation that was leaked over the weekend. It's obviously, they need to figure out who's leaking from the White House. That has to be someone high within government that put that out there to sources. It's our job as the press to cover that. But I'm curious from your perspective and your sources on the state of play that leak played out in the Middle East and who then phoned the White House to get to the negotiating table.
It's a great question because these leaks can be substantial. And when you're looking at a situation with 50,000 U.S. service members destroyers, refuelers, fighter jets across the region, the operational security is very significant whenever there are plans being made to strike Iran. And the president indicated he called off the planned strikes at the request not only of Iran, but also of Gulf allies like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the UAE.
We talked about
that. What was interesting, though, Lawrence, we spoke with senior Israeli intelligence officials over the weekend who said they weren't even aware of the details of the plan. And that's how close the administration was holding these details to the chest because of how sensitive it is in the region. And so moving forward, we do anticipate the Trump administration will do
everything. Everyone thought that Trump was going to attack. And I saw Brandon Weichert, who I plan to have on tomorrow as well, talk about this. Everyone thought Trump was going to attack. Well, what happened? Trump tacoed. Trump chickened out. And we can say that's a great thing. I hope he does it even further. But what else did the newscaster just say? Hey, Mr. Newsman, Mr. Correspondent, Mr. Journalist, sir, I'm a fan of you. I wanted to be like you when I was a little boy. Well, what's your opinion on the 50,000 troops? You know, the ones you just mentioned. You said, oh, they're there in the region. Do you think America can protect them? Why are you running Hasbro for a country that can't protect them? Well, of course, running Hasbro for Israel. So go back to the clip. Ooh, you can get the ivermectin and mebendazole, 1776 rx.health. Here, cut back to me. The idea that you go on Fox News and you have to act like, oh, we don't know what's going on. Trump is doing it again, guys. He's got it all figured out. How many times can he declare victory? How many times can they have a deal? It's just like Anthony says, he doesn't believe. Like, I ask with hope. I'm like, Anthony. Please, Anthony Aguilar, please tell me, please let me know, like, is there any route of, like, de-escalation from this? Is there any way out of this? He's like, no, it's already expanded. It's already here. And then I have debates with people. I argue with people. I talk to people on stream. And I don't know. It's like you can see and then they're blind or something. And they want to tell you, like, about the painting or whatever. Here's the thing. But they're willfully blind. That's the thing, is that you just have to take your hand away from your face and then you'll see the clear geopolitical reality. Can we go back to the Fox News clip?
Well, obviously, Trey, you know, we are seeing the White House trying to keep their cards close to the vest. But there is also a tremendous buildup. We've watched a tremendous buildup over the last couple of months. Some of that is Trump trying to put pressure on Iran.
Trump's constipation.
When you compare the buildup that we've seen over the last couple of weeks to the buildup that we had when all of this began 6 months ago, can you compare the posture?
It's slightly larger, and the president indicated the strikes that were planned are actually larger as well. He described them as the largest since World War II. But when we look at the equation
right
now,
it's slightly larger. It's slightly more big. It's bigger than World War II.
Of economic deterrence. And that's exactly what we have seen from the Trump administration.
We've been sanctioning these people forever. It doesn't work.
The resumption of the U.S. naval blockade. This blockade of Iranian ports is costing the Iranian regime hundreds of millions of dollars each and every day.
It's costing us billions of dollars, trillions of dollars in our interest. The rate on the 5-year bond
maintains its presence in the region. They have very few options in terms of an off ramp here. They are either looking at a return to combat operations or some sort of agreement, a negotiated settlement that would alleviate that economic pressure and avoid strikes against the regime.
Okay, Trey, thank you so much. He said part one is to open up the strait, which could happen today, and then he said part two is focus on their nuclear weapons and capabilities. All right, let's hand it over to Ashley. She has some headlines for us. Hey, Ashley.
Hey, guys. Good morning to you. We're going to start with this. It's that stomach.
All right. So you get the picture. You get the idea. I don't like the idea of like wargaming and fantasizing about things that we already know to be true. And I'll read the Gunther Eagleman propaganda headline. Go ahead and get that back up. He's one of the notorious propagandists on X. Someone high up in the government just leaked a planned strike on Iran. Major military operation was in the works. Notice what he says. He's talking about negotiated settlement, planned settlement. He's also talking about the blockade, which is a violation of the MOU. And since our position, since the war started, has only gotten weaker, then they're not going to rescind that from the MOU. They're not going to say, oh, no, America, you can blockade us and it's going to be fine. The blockade is unacceptable. The ships are far enough away from Iran's missile range to not be directly under threat of the anti-ship missile. The second that changes, and that really will be ultimately the death of the American empire, the second one of those cruisers goes down, the second one of those aircraft carriers go down, You can say we already had to take evasive action against the Houthis in 2025 in the Red Sea. We lost, I think it was an F-16. It's now at the bottom of the ocean there, if I believe. But that same thing will happen again, only 10 times worse, and they just say it so flippantly, they don't even care. They're just reporting the broadcasting, reporting the news. When I think of 50,000 American troops deployed over there, it makes me so angry. Like, I want to curse in here, but I can't say the F word. Like, screw these people. Like, screw these people to hell, the people that want to take Americans, our friends. I have plenty of friends that are in the service right now. My co-host Tim Tompkins does as well. The idea that you're going to take our friends, you're going to go sacrifice them like scraps off your plate, you know, to make sure Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. That's what Trump said about the people that just died. It's so sick. He said that they didn't die in a war, but that their dying wish was that Iran would not have a nuclear weapon. Well, sounds like you didn't give them what they wanted, Trump, because you need to say it's not a war in order to excuse their deaths. You need to be holding blood feast, 118 years old. Look at that right there. But you also want to, it's not a war, but they died for my war. You can't do that. Look at that. I'm holding blood feast, 118 years old. Please, God, just let us nuke our land. Nothing else matters. I'll do anything. Please, I just want to see blood before the last time I die. That's respectable bipartisan. That's like Mark Levin. Yeah. Mark Levin, establishment conservative commentator, generated these coffins, manufactured consent from the president, manipulated the president to kill Americans in the Middle East because no amount of blood, no amount of treasure will ever be enough for people that do not consider themselves our countrymen. That is the reality because they want it all because ultimately they're not taking from anything. They're just giving to themselves. We feel like we've had something taken because we care about our country. And not only we don't care about our country, not only do we care about our country, we care about people around the world. And we don't justify mass murder with our weapons. We don't justify dropping bombs on people's heads just because, ha ha ha, they're towel head muzzies or whatever. That doesn't work. That because one day somebody is going to treat you like that. And then when you pray to God, and you ask him to save you, you ask him to have mercy. You say, please, 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 they're attacking me. When did you have mercy for them? When did you show them respect? When did you show them any kind of care at all? When did you acknowledge they were also made by God? Or did you just think they were animals, you know? You know, you can just spray like boiling hot water on them and kill them whenever you want. You know, you can just light their villages on fire. You can destroy 50,000 of their homes because they're dogs, right? So how are you going to explain that to God? Like, if you do have that opinion, you can apologize for it. You can atone for that. You can do plenty of things, right? But if you're like Lindsey Graham and you're 71 years old and the last thing you do on this earth is go to the Ukrainian drone factory and you hold up a giant black Looney Tunes bomb, grinning ear to ear with crud on your teeth. There he is right there. And then you die passionately trying to kill already 1.5 million dead in the Ukraine-Russia war conservatively, trying to kill more millions of men. I don't think that goes well for you, man. And God is merciful and his mercy endures forever. But going out like that, actively trying to just kill mass numbers of people, like, it's just not going to end well for you, bro. It's actually really sad. It's actually really sad. Because, like, how do you get to that point? This is what I always ask myself about people in power that have the ability, and this is what I really ask myself about the Trump administration, people in power that have the ability to truly change the system. All it would take is Trump pulls out his cell phone and says, hey, they're making me commit genocide, and he tweets that out, he's free. But he'll never do that because he likes being a slave. He enjoys the Stockholm Syndrome. And that's the real reality of where we are. And she's obsessed with it as well. There seems to be this fascination with bombs. And they like to visit these drone factories. They like to visit these weapons factories. They don't like to go on the battlefield, though. They don't like to go pick up a gun or go pick up a grenade or go pick up a whatever and go put boots on the ground, their boots on the ground. They don't want that for their friends, their family. They're more than happy to go check out. You know, it's like shopping on Amazon versus like shopping in real life. Oh, this is nice to get to buy this bomb to murder this person. I get to buy this drone to fly into this residential building. This is fun. We're having fun here. It must be very cool for them to experience that because, like, this is the reality of their murder. And now they get to see it and hold it in their hands. They get to that they have this fascination with the weapon, the fascination with the bomb, because it's all they got. They don't have power. They don't have truth. They don't have love. They don't have anything. All they have is more murder, and they think that they can beat you down and give you the same Stockholm syndrome to accept it. And I don't think Americans are there anymore. I don't think we're there collectively. I don't think we're there on an individual level. I think that people around the country are realizing they didn't vote for this. They don't care for it, and they won't be held responsible for it. And ultimately, you're not responsible for it as an average American citizen, especially not if you voted for values that were antithetical to this, which is what Trump represented in 2024. The idea of that creature, that Lindsey Graham creature, who as recently as, you know, a year or two ago was reviled and hated, they manufactured consent and they rebuilt the neocons. They made him and Ted Cruz popular within a certain wing of the younger Republicans. It's completely sick. The idea that the guy that tore down Trump, that attacked Trump, that hated Trump, that wanted to end Trump, the idea that Trump would cry more at his funeral than he cried at Charlie Kirk's, than he cared more at Charlie Kirk's, it's pretty extreme. Like, I know that ain't what I voted for. And when you see the reaction he has to Lindsey dying compared to the reaction with Kirk, you know, he can't relate to Kirk. He can relate a lot to Lindsey, though. I bet they had a lot of intimate conversations. Lord have mercy. Let's shudder to think about that. Go ahead and play clip number 22, Scott Bessent, the gay dude who beat up Elon Musk. I don't know, maybe Elon beat him up. Play clip number 22.
And you know, we've seen President Trump last week threatened what would have been one of the largest military campaigns, or the largest military campaign since World War II, against the Iranians. And now we are, because of that, we are in talks with the Iranians. And I think there is a chance we may have a deal today or tomorrow to open the strait and move towards a more normalized position in this conflict. And, you know, that's because their Air Force is wiped out, their Navy is wiped out, substantial portion of their missiles are wiped out. More importantly, their missile production capability is wiped out. So, you know, anything that happens in the Gulf will benefit Japan and indeed the rest of the world, Joe.
Complete total lies. Keep in mind the strait was open before the war. We're the ones that closed the strait, not Iran, by blowing up the Ayatollah and blowing up the little girl's school. That's the reality. They control the strait now. That wasn't the reality before the war. We initiated all of that, right? And we're not happy about how it went. We're trying to change how it went, but we don't have the military ability to manifest that reality. And I just covered that for a straight hour with Anthony Aguilar. We don't have the military, really, we don't have the control over our military from an operational perspective to be successful. Now what does this mean? This is key, and we went over this with Anthony. Simply put, the financial interests dictate the reality on the battlefield. They are the ones that are in a command and control position over the armed forces, not even necessarily the generals or the president or whatever. It is the companies that make the missiles, make the bombs, make the tanks, make the logistics, make the whatever, and they get the final say. And that's why putting Israel in ascendancy over all parts of DOW, and then merging the military industrial complex that they have with the military industrial complex we have, that's why it's so dangerous. We're doing gain of function research on it. It's not good. And we need the capability because we got to fight China and Russia at the same time. I don't want to fight Russia and China at the same time. Does that sound like fun to you? That sounds like the world that these people created. And ultimately, they made a much weaker America have to enter these conflicts and enter these wars. And it's just like setting someone up to failure and giving them a -1,000 handicap and then expecting them to be successful. And that's why I get so mad on the generational front. Look at this. Look at this is Renaissance art. This is Dark Ages art. This is Gilded Age art 2026.
Oh, yes, Mr. President, you're doing so good. I need you to rip up the MOU now. You gotta restore the blockade, you gotta start killing Muslims again, you gotta initiate World War III, Mr. President, because we have to be successful against Hamas and Hezbollah. It doesn't matter how many American soldiers die.
Oh, yes, well, Mr. President, if we can do Iwo Jima, we can do this.
All those young American bodies, all those young American boys dead in the Persian Gulf, you know, we're gonna get what we want.
That's absolutely right, Mr. President. Just drink from this chalice, drink from this goblet. You'll be made a chaos demigod. You know, we're doing a ritual here. Netanyahu is also involved as well. They say he's dying of prostate cancer. It's also a part of the ritual. You might not understand. You know, Donald, you're a red heifer. We're gonna do a ritual here, okay? And you can laugh, obviously having fun, that satire. We're making light of the situation. But they are collectively, pull up Grima Wormtongue in The Lord of the Rings. They are Grima Wormtongue maxing. They are Salacious Crumb maxing, a la Jabba the Hutt. They are the thing, the little thing that is around Trump that has that influence, that plays that repetition. And what do all the experts say about Trump? It's the last thing he heard. It's the last 5 minutes. Robert Barnes thinks that's frontal lobe dementia. I tend to agree. And you can say, I think Trump is evil. I think what Trump has done is evil as well. I think he is evil as well. That's why I'll never support him. Right? But, you know, I think these people are a huge factor. I think they're also manipulating grandpa a la Joe Biden. And I think if you discount that and you say that we're stupid for saying that, people were telling me that I was stupid for saying that in spaces a year ago. Look at what's happened now. And there you got Mark Levin right there. Yes, Mr. President. Here's the thing, Mr. President. You know, a bunch of American soldiers just died. That's why you got to send more in. That's why you got to send more into dying. No, get out of the throne room. You're not supposed to be here. Joe Kent, Tulsi Gabbard, get out of here. You're not wanted here anymore. We're not a fan of you. We're a fan of killing Hamas and Hezbollah, aren't we, Mr. President? You're absolutely right. Anything for Israel. I'd be prime minister of Israel. I love inflation. Oh, yeah, I love it when the housing prices go up. Oh, you do love it when the housing prices go up. It's good for the boomers, and the boomers support war and murder. Ah! All right, that's enough. All right, we're having too much fun. But seriously, that's the best way to illustrate it. You'd have to make it into a horror movie. You'd have to make it into an allegory. You'd have to make it into a comedy because it just doesn't track. It's just not real. You know, you watch Idiocracy back. They're nice people. They're happy. They're not hurting anybody. We're already worse than them. We're dumber than them because we think that we are smart. We think that we're intelligent. There's nothing intelligent about supporting a regime, ultimately the American Empire, that does this stuff. We have to return to the Republic. Look at that. Yeah. We gonna have ourselves here a trial. We gonna do a war in Iran. But we're not developing a nuclear weapon. And we're fighting Israel. Israel's fighting us. It's just a war. It's none of your business. We gonna kill you. Oh, that's funny. And the point there that's made, we're not even gonna have that problem. We're like, apparently like an Idiocracy, of course, like the dumb people have all the kids. We're not gonna have people. We're facing imminent population collapse, and all that'll really be started and triggered by the global famine as a result of this World War III. So it's not a matter of domestic policy. It's a matter of the world and the existence of the world and the reality of nuclear weapons, human osmotic pressure, a la mass migration. That's another term for it that you might be more familiar with. Collapse of government, regional war, and, you know, the battle of multipolarity. And there's going to be a new framework of law that comes out of all of this. There's going to be a new Geneva Convention. There's going to be a new international framework, UN treaties, you name it. There's going to be a new body, a new everything, because that's the reality that the United States created for itself. We created it when Joe Biden tore up SWIFT and said the Russians couldn't use it and froze, I think, like $300 billion in their assets. That pushed BRICS to develop SIPs so they could have an alternative against that. We did that by fighting Iran and making them take ownership of the Strait of Hormuz. We are setting ourselves up for a true global conflict. And if we acknowledge it, maybe there's a hope or a chance in hell that we can stop it. And I really enjoy getting to break all this down for you. You can follow me at Rex Jones News with a Z on Twitter. I do a morning show. I do an evening show. You can look at my link tree right there. New American Journal, host of Gray Area Talks with Truism Tim. I am live 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. every single morning. And Thursday and Sunday, I'm live 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. You want to be there, Central Standard Time, New American Journal, Gray Area, Rex Jones News, and I'm a host on the big network. So I'm a professional. Pretty cool. See you tomorrow.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.